It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running, a minute or so late. You'll have to please pardon me. I had to be chased in from outside. This is, without a doubt, hold all calls, the most beautiful day of 2021 thus far. And I can't imagine it getting much better. Not a cloud in the sky all day. Perfect temperatures, light breeze, all you need is a light jacket. Yeah, it's the 26th day of April, 2021, and I'm Robin, and I'm in a righteous good mood. There's something awesome about getting stuff done in decent weather, nice light in the sky, and get things done I did. I have been a yard-mowing, weed-eating human being. And it has felt so good. At this rate, you know, if I can do this every day, and the acre will keep me that busy. If I can do this every day, I'll have those 30 pounds gone in no time. And have my A1C back down in happy land. And, oh, goodness me. Not bragging or anything, it's a beautiful day here, and you know, I literally live in a park, and it's fantastic. But it is also Moran Monday, and we got a lineup. Oh goodness me, we've got a lineup. But if you would like to augment your live listening experience, I of course, as always, encourage you to pop over to headon.live, click on chat room, and I'm going in there myself. Pardon the clacking. Oh, for pity's sakes. Working. There I am. Yay. Okie doke. But anyway, if you'd like to augment your live listening experience, pop on by, you know, and you'll be immediately greeted by Antol and Roger and Oregon and Squeaky and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave. It just must not be as fabulous today as it is here. That's all I can say. There's a good time had there, and by all means, take advantage of it if you wish. That's what it's there for, to make things a little bit more fun. Let's see here. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so we have a weekend's worth of thanks to extend to our subscribers. partial sponsors of the program, one and all. And so for this 26th day of the month, we say thank you. I say thank you to Ralphs, our lone subscriber for the 26th day of the month. And thanks as well to Mark and Peter and different Mark. Thank you so kindly. Thank you to Josh. Thank you to Pamela in Washington State. Thank you to Samson. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. You are how this program continues to exist. Mm-hmm. And so where does that find us? Well, we are at, we had a little bit of an overage left from last week, so I think we're at like $680. So this week and $380 to finish off last week, and we'll see where that all goes. And of course, Robin, Oscar winners and wieners. Jeffrey discusses the Oscars. I tried to watch last night, but of course, Shentel is a screwed up operation and there was no way for me to watch online. Never mind. So I found the Oscars very entertaining, as to no one's surprise. Vladimir Putin won for best portrayal of Joseph Stalin. Donald Trump won two awards, one for his portrayal of Vladimir Putin, and the betrayal of America was his second award. Derek Chauvin won his award for the portrayal of Donald Trump, where Chauvin played the role of a sociopath who did not mind killing minorities. Yes, and all in all, it was a wild Oscar night. Oscar Wilde. Oh, dear. The llama is not feeling terribly vigorous. Yeah, I'm sure Robin remembers the Oscars of 63, the year she was born in Alabama. Well, as it turns out, the Oscars that year had an Alabama appeal. Anne Bancroft received Best Actress honors for her role as Annie Sullivan in the Helen Keller movie The Miracle Worker, which, of course, took place in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle. No, it's actually an indigenous word. Not far from where Robin was born. Then there was Gregory Peck winning the Best Oscar Actor Oscar for his work in To Kill a Mockingbird, which took place in the fictional town of Macon, Alabama. And finally, Best Picture went to Lawrence of Arabia, which was filmed in a little town just outside of Arab, Alabama, by the name of Egypt. That was quality. Not every day you get an Arab, Alabama reference. You sure about Lawrence of Arabia, Jeffrey, being filmed in Egypt, Alabama? No, but if Alabama Republicans like Tommy the Tuber or Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions the Turd can lie about everything, why can't I? The giraffe has a good point. And speaking of motion picture embellishments, and I just loved watching Iraq veteran and Palestine, West Virginia-born native Kelly Lynch as one of Charlie's Angels in her acting in the movie Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. Is Giraffe early into the Long Island iced teas? And I think you're getting actor Kelly Lynch mixed up with Private Jessica Lynch, with the latter being an Iraqi veteran who was captured by Iraqi forces on March 23rd of 2003. Talk about embellishment. Releases to the press by government sources suggested that Jessica Lynch was like an American girl Rambo who fought to her last breath following her capture and was tortured and raped by Iraqi forces, with the story being embellished more each time it was repeated, including gunshots and knife wounds. But the reality was that after an ambush by Iraqi forces, Jessica Lynch received multiple injuries but did not fire her gun. She was taken by Iraqi forces to a hospital where doctors, working with what they had available, tried to help her be comfortable and relieve her pain and save her life. She's an American hero because she joined the U.S. forces and went to Iraq to fight for her country, unlike the two Oscar wieners who sent her there, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, who conveniently skipped out of combat when it was their turn to serve their country. Yes, Jessica is even more of a hero because it would have been so easy back and for her to say that all those great details written and said about her in the media were true and just bask in the glory. However, she did not upon returning to West Virginia, but rather she spoke of fellow soldiers who did perform heroic deeds. But because they were not the ideal American hero, their stories were not chosen because their depictions did not fit into the propaganda hoax. So from Jeffrey the Giraffe, Joey, and all the Horn family, happy birthday, Jessica Lynch. You're an honest person and a great patriot and a great West Virginian. Yeah, and anticipating where we're probably going to be going with this Moran Monday, of course, it's Moran Monday, and Jeffrey would like to send out a Moran Monday salute to Senator Joe Manchin. Yeah, the Manchin said that President Joe Biden's infrastructure plan was fine when it comes to fixing the roads and highways, but should not include elder care or financial assistance to caregivers who take care of the elderly. Now, keep in mind, Joe Manchin's 73 years old and basically does not give a good goddamn about his own contemporaries. Meanwhile, Governor Death Sentence down in Florida has declared by law that it's proper and legal for drivers to run over people who are protesting. I think that's Oklahoma, unless they've also done it in Florida. Well, if Manchin's sordid thinking is embraced, there will be a lot of elderly people protesting in Florida when they don't receive some infrastructure. I don't know about you, but this reminds me of a movie several years ago called Death Race 2000, when race car drivers were racing across the country to finish the race, but on the way to the finish, the drivers received points for running over and killing people. The elderly were worth the most, 100 points if the car driver hit them and killed them. So between Manchin and DeSantis, and whoever is the governor of Oklahoma, what I'm guessing from their sentiments is this: we really don't give a damn about the elderly or really anybody else, but fix up those roads so we can run down the people and their rights. This has been Joey's Journal for Moran Monday, the 26th day of April, 2021, with Giraffrey starring in his own Oscar-winning role as the Horn Family Community Congregation mascot. And so there is a $20 Oscar-winning mascot challenge on the table. Thank you very kindly, Joey and Giraffrey, for that. That'll get us down to $640 to finish, to catch up. And then, well, we're kind of in the downhill sprint to the end of April, because Friday on the Front Porch will mark the final broadcast of the month of April. And then Saturday is May 1st, Derby Day. But far more important than it being Derby Day is the fact that it will be the 28th anniversary of my beloved partner and I getting hitched on a hilltop in Roane County, West Virginia, watched at the time through the crosshairs of a 30-06. We only found that out later. I've told the whole story before. Maybe I'll tell it again on Friday on the Front Porch sometime. It's a heck of a story. You know, there are just some things that become just parts of the program. Can you explain the Sparky introduction statement? What do you mean by fold space and become man cave? LOL. What's third stage guild navigator mean? Well, the third stage guild navigator is someone who can fold space. And it comes from the book Dune by Frank Herbert. And it all just goes back to one day when Sparky was goofing around with these machines. And he showed up as both Sparky and man cave in the chat room, and I declared that he had folded space. And so the idea that Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator and folding space, became part of the program. Also, you should check out This Is a Robbery on Netflix about the 1990 art heist in Boston on St. Paddy's Night. They stole the only known seascape by Rembrandt to ever exist. Devastating. I'm a fan. I know he was probably a religious weirdo anyway. Great miniseries. I've got no problem with Rembrandt. I mean, Chris in Germany has been helping me to reappreciate the Dutch masters. I looked at him in the National Gallery and it was like, wow, did nobody in the Netherlands have anything but black and brown and maybe a little bit of dark beige and a little bit of, you know, white? Ugh. But no, everybody was a religious maniac back then, because, you know, they killed you if you were an atheist. Well, thank you to Perware, answering part of Joey and Giraffe's challenge. It's half of that remains now. Thank you very kindly. That's very, very nice indeed. Okay, so Oh, a Vermeer was also stolen in that heist in Boston, Otto tells us. Painting still not recovered. That sucks. So anyway, it is Moran Monday. Oh yes, it so is. And I guess to celebrate Moran Monday, we're already blipping. We had a blip about 8 minutes ago. Thank you for letting me know, Brother Deaconesa. Hopefully it doesn't interfere with the process of the program. No, Moran Monday. You know what? These morans are so moran that it sort of begs for, yeah, let's do this the right way.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears as you listen to the... as you wander in, figuratively speaking, to the Moran Monday tent, wherein we have gathered, oh my God, every manner of Moran under the bright sunny sky, the bright cloudless blue sunny sky. We've got them all. Birthers, tenthers, ninthers, deathers, birchers, booger eaters, libertardians, maggots, chimpanzees, Republicans, the entire lot of the right-wing menagerie. Yes, indeed. Only moments ago, you were standing there on the carnival midway, vainly throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope that you might somehow bring home a not as precious as they seem little baby iguana that could then grow to the size of a Volkswagen. You can have baby iguana races in the hallway and things like that. They stand up and they prop themselves on their tails and they just, oh, they get it. Yeah, that's what you were doing, but then you wandered over here, and here we stand, right behind this thin cybernetic veil. They're all right here. And for those who like to keep the Moran Monday traveling show going, well, you're giving up about not quite a half a stick of chewing gum to be a $10 a month subscriber and keep Moran Monday alive. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The standard warnings go out. Keep an eye and a hand on children, small dogs, other animals, purses, watches, bracelets, rings, ear bobs, various and sundry forms of jewelry, ankle bracelets, toe rings, piercings. Yes, and even that little iguana that somehow or another you managed to win throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls. I know. How does that happen? But it does. It does sometimes. And, of course, European-style messenger bags, man purses. Hang on to those, too, because with all of these things, the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Lord God, you will, especially today. I mean, Joey alluded... Joey alluded to one of the nominees for this Moran Monday, and we will be getting to that. But before we do, let's see here. Jeremy with a note says, Robin, you know as well as we all do that they are not signal blips, but since many of us have had at least one round, if not two, of the barcoding, it's simply Bill Gates trying to hijack the stream to spread his insidious message of world health and the importance of vaccination. Oh, the humanity. Oh, the humanity indeed. And thank you for that, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. And so now let's do wander in behind that thin cybernetic veil of imaginary canvas and, well, who's waiting for us? You know who's waiting for us. I'll tell you who's waiting for us. Joe Manchin is waiting for us. Oh, yes, he is. Because he decided, well, somebody decided to book him on State of the Union on CNN this weekend, yakking with, I think, Dana Bash. and she asked him a question about the filibuster, yada, yada, yada. Look, am I going to wind up having to grandfather Joe Manchin out of Moran Monday? Because if I'm not mistaken, he's been part of a lot of Moran Mondays lately. And he just keeps getting more man. Yeah. So, you know, in what was it, last week, maybe the week before, I brought up the word ahistoricity. There's that lovely speech impediment that's going to be bothering me for a while. Ahistoricity. It is to be without knowledge of history whatsoever. And so get the hockey puck and the duct tape, because there is some ahistorical moranity going on here from the senior senator from West Virginia, who actually now is in a position where he rules an entire nation of 350 people and can take out his vengeance on them at a whim. God, this will be my, what, fifth, sixth, seventh listen to this clip. It doesn't get any better. God, no.
The best politics is good government. I can't believe that people believe that if you just do it my way, and that'll give us the momentum to get through the next election. But when you do something that everyone tags on to, and I've seen good things happen, the people voted against it, took credit for it when they went back home. We won't give this system a chance to work.
What? You got to give people a chance to get on the bandwagon? And what is that supposed to be a good thing, that Republicans vote against programs that help people and then they go home and lie because they're Republicans and lying is what Republicans do, and they take credit for shit that they voted against? This is a good thing, Joe? Because I don't think it is. I don't think you should be able to vote against something and then go home and brazenly lie to the rubes, I mean constituents, and tell them that you voted for their, say, COVID relief check when you voted against it. Every Republican. Right. Yeah. But no, that's just great, says the this intellectual titan. Oh, getting close to Titanic Tuesday there. No. This is still Moran Monday. This intellectual titan of the Senate. My God Almighty. You know, in the four tormented years from 2017 to January 20th, 2021, of the reign of Nitwit Nero, you know, fact checkers found out that they suddenly were in the midst of a full-time job that was actually going to require overtime. And they spent 4 years cataloging literally tens of thousands of lies told by COVID Caligula. And I imagine some of them are not in the business anymore because it just got to be too exhausting. Well, we may be reaching a point where something similar is happening to those of us who try to keep up with the things that Joe Manchin doesn't know or understand. And, of course, this is one of those moments. Matt in San Francisco suggests just change it to Manchin Monday. The moron is assumed. We take the moron as read. But, yeah. Manchin Monday. Kind of has a ring to it. But to get back to the clip here, he wants a bill that everybody can sign off on. How do you get that when there is no way in heaven or hell a Republican in the Senate is going to sign off on anything that this administration wants? Does Joe Manchin actually believe, and you'll note I didn't use the word think, does he actually believe that if only they would strip down the infrastructure bill to a little bit of asphalt and maybe some paving jobs here and there, as long as they benefited Republicans in Republican states, that all the Republicans would suddenly sign on and say, yay! Because that's living in a fantasy world. Republicans oppose good government because Republicans hate good government. This is only a three-hour program, so I don't have enough time to go through and list each and every time Republicans have told us and then followed up and proven to us that they despise government. And, of course, the biggest examples of that, I mean, just to cite a couple, well, you know, there's Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, who declared, "The nine most dangerous words in the English language, Mommy, are... I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." Well, the government is here to help, because we are the government. But the rubes and the ill-informed and the poorly educated lap that shit up like a kitty laps up cream. And just loved it.
What we got to do is we got to have us some small government. Small enough government that they can't interfere in the legitimate exercise of our small government prerogatives to discriminate against anybody we want to. That's just what it is. Small government.
And then building on the concept of small government, you get Grover Norquist some years later declaring that, we want to make the government small enough that we can drown it in a bathtub. You know, that kind of means you don't want government at all, what Grover Norquist said. If you want to drown it in a bathtub, it's just shitty. And, you know, and once upon a time, Paul Eddie Munster Ryan passed for what went for a heavyweight intellectual in Republican circles and was certainly treated as such by the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. And his fondest wish was to eliminate Social Security, going all the way back to when he was using Social Security money to go to college and he was standing around the keg at the old fraternity kegger, fantasizing about the day when he would be able to kick Granny off of her Social Security and take away her food stamps and let her die like she was supposed to. That's just three examples. But I'm damned if I can fit. And of course, Dana Bash is sitting over there as silent as a graven image. No pushback to this mad bullshit whatsoever. And we haven't even gotten to the awful part yet, because there is an awful part to this. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Darlene in Connecticut. "I got my first Fauci ouchie today," Darlene says. "I'm so happy and relieved." By God, that's a cowbell. Ah, we're all proud and happy for you, Darlene. That's just wonderful. And can't wait for you to get the second one and then wait 2 weeks and you can do stuff. Hopefully, if we don't just blow this whole thing up all over again. Talking to a young person earlier today, I said, "Have you gotten your shot yet?" "Huh? No." "You mean the vaccine?" "Yeah." "No, I'm not going to get that."
"No!"
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to Joe Manchin. Because this is just so damned much fun. So he's waiting around. You know, if only we make the bill shitty enough, all the Republicans will sign on and the Democrats will go, "Well, okay." This is your ruler, Horn family. I mean, I know you busted your ass to give the White House to Joe Biden, and good for everybody who did. But this is your ruler. This is the guy who decides when or if Joe Biden's agenda goes forward. a coal broker, a millionaire coal broker from West Virginia. And once again, you know, I apologize. There's not much we can do about it. It just sort of is what it is, what it is. Because as awful as he is, here's a reminder, whatever Republican would replace him would be orders of magnitude worse. Now, he's not up again until 24. And that means that we have a chance in 2022 to render Joe irrelevant. But that only happens if we unseat some Republicans in places like Florida and hang on to the seats that we've got to hang on to, like Reverend Raphael Warnock's in Georgia. Wouldn't it be wonderful to unseat Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist? That's the job ahead of us. And I hope we are up to the task. Anyway, back to Joe and the hockey puck.
I'm not going to be part of blowing up this Senate of ours, or basically this democracy of ours, or the republic that we have.
I mentioned ahistoricity. This is the beginning of that. Actually, see, because this is the part where I started wanting to eat dirt and run rabbits. He sees blowing up the filibuster. Actually, I prefer less eliminationist language, like, you know, simply getting rid of the filibuster. He sees that as somehow being bad for democracy. I didn't go to school in, elementary school, middle school, high school. I didn't go to school in West Virginia. I got my degree, my college degrees at Harvard on the Mon. So I'm not sure exactly. Maybe eighth grade. Because that's West Virginia history. But at some point in time, I know Joe must have had civics. You know, he was too old for I'm Only a Bill on Capitol Hill. But he must have had some civics along the way. He's a senator, a United States senator. He's got to have some, at least rudimentary understanding of the Constitution and the separation of powers. But then again, that itself can be entirely too much optimism for one human being to stand. Because after all, we have Tommy the Tuber from Alabama, who thinks that the three branches of government are the presidency, the House, and the Senate. Yeah, oops. But the filibuster is antithetical to democracy. As our pal Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx observed earlier today, 50 states don't have the filibuster. The UN General Assembly doesn't have the filibuster. It's pretty much only reserved to the Senate of the United States. And just to review, it ain't in the Constitution. There's no section or clause that says and the Senate shall be governed by an anti-democratic notion held over from the days when we thought slavery was a good thing. It ain't there at all. But somehow or another, Joe Manchin thinks that there's something to do with democracy in the filibuster. And the only thing that there is to do with democracy in the filibuster is that the filibuster prevents democracy from happening in the Senate of the United States. It was kind of a big deal earlier this week when the House of Representatives took steps to actually grant statehood to the District of Columbia and I think Puerto Rico, but definitely D.C. And of course, that caused the little racist thought bubbles to start appearing over Republican heads. I forget which genius it was that declared D.C. couldn't have statehood because there were too many criminals in D.C. And weren't talking about the politicians either. No, we know what they were talking about, don't we? Yes, we do. And so there's democracy with the filibuster. But the breathtaking degree of stupidity continues for almost a whole nother minute.
If we have a 51-vote threshold in the Senate, the same as the House wasn't designed to be partisan. The House was designed to be hot as a firecracker.
That doesn't even make sense! Whoop! The House wasn't designed to be partisan. The House was designed to be hot as a firecracker. Partisan is hot as a firecracker. He's just making shit up. But I guess that's what you do when you don't know what you don't know. But about the purpose and founding of the House, what he's offhandedly referring to is a conversation or a declaration that is said to have, and it may be apocryphal, to have taken place during the constitutional debates about the idea of a bicameral legislature. And George Washington said, the story goes, he was drinking his tea, and he took his teacup and said, the tea in the cup is hot. And then he poured some in the saucer, because I guess that was a thing they did back then. He said, and think of the tea in the cup as the House of Representatives. It's hot, and we will cool it by pouring it into the saucer of the Senate. And he slurped his cool tea, because it's, 1787, and ain't nobody drinking no sweet iced tea yet. That would have to wait. But there's still nothing in that apocryphal tale about a filibuster. That hot as a fire, that hot and cooling off thing, that had nothing to do with the filibuster. It had to do with the way that the bodies were constituted. Because the system they had come up with in 1787, which they eventually got around to getting rid of, was one in which the only actual direct democracy that happened in the new government as it was envisioned would be practiced in the House of Representatives, where voters, you know what voters meant back in 1787, white men who owned property that could be counted, and the things that counted as property could be other human beings. They would vote directly. Women wasn't going to vote. Weren't no black folk going to vote. No indigenous people. More on that in a minute. They weren't going to vote. That's the democracy that Joe's talking about. But the Senate would be chosen by the various state legislatures. Senators would be sent to sit in the Senate, and the only participation voters would have in that would be to the extent that they voted, again, the white, property-owning, human-being-owning males, to the extent that they voted for their members of their legislature, they would theoretically, indirectly have some teeny, tiny something or another to do with who got to be a senator, but nothing in the way of direct action. Direct democracy. And again, that fell away. That was changed by constitutional amendment. I hope this isn't too history-ish, but given the degree of ahistoricity that will be on display in this particular Moran Monday, I feel like it's necessary. And even if Joe Manchin doesn't know this, by God, there is something of value in us knowing it. Because if we know it, when we hear him spout this bilious drivel, we will know that he is as full of shit as a Christmas goose. The House wasn't supposed to be partisan. It was supposed to be, it's hot as a firecracker.
What?
Ugh. But it gets worse. It does. It gets worse. Just so we get the full impact, we'll back her up. Just there we go.
If we have a 51-vote threshold in the Senate, the same as the House wasn't designed to be partisan. The House was designed to be hot as a firecracker. We were designed to cool it off.
That's the George Washington illusion. But this is the part of the program where I once again remind us all that the House had a filibuster. And they got rid of it. It took a couple of tries to get rid of it once and for all, but they got rid of it. And before the end of the 19th century, if you want a real metric for just how screwed up the Senate of the United States is and has been, it lies in the fact that something the House realized was toxic to any idea of governance whatsoever and got rid of in the 1800s is still clinging to life in the Senate of the United States in 2021. I think about 180 years since the first time they started getting rid of it in the House. Thereabouts. That's how antediluvian the Senate is. World's greatest debating society, my ass. I know. Earther pointing out, sometimes you have to burn a democratic country to save a democratic country, Robin. Be totes obvious if you think about it. The three branches are the left, the right, and the main branches. Duh. Yeah, duh, Earther. I mean, you know. And adding, to quote Dr. Phil, it's not Chinese food without the duck sauce. Or was that Dr. Phil according to Mad TV? How I almost read that. Duck. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and duck! No. Thanks, Arthur. But this bit, oh, Jesus, it makes me crazy. We're going to cool it off. And he's not done with his ahistorical stupidity.
And that's the Founding Fathers. It was a brilliant strategy they looked at. So why can't we try to make this work?
You see what I mean? He thinks the Founding Fathers put the filibuster in the Constitution. It's not there. And it's making my little poor punkin' noggin head hurt just thinking about it. How do you, and you know, beyond just pointing out the obvious ignorance of this, how do you remedy it? You've got to come to a sort of intellectual conclusion here. You've got to decide, do you think Joe Manchin actually knows and he's just lying through his teeth because he's a closet racist who somehow pines for the good old days? Or is he just ignorant? Because it comes back to, ignorance can be cured. Stupidity, however, is forever. You can't fix stupid. A 51-vote threshold in the Senate of the United States would mean that shit got done. It would also mean that we would be in mortal peril should the Republicans ever get a majority in the Senate again, and that is not at all unlikely. I mean, I do acknowledge that. But Joe Manchin clinging to the filibuster as if it was some sort of sacred item personally put in the Constitution, but that, no! And here's another thing that puts the lie to his ignorance. If the Constitution does not anticipate a 51-vote majority, then why did the framers give the vice president serving as the president of the Senate the power to break ties? I mean, to hear Joe Manchin I guess it was a 100-member Senate in 1787, too. No, it wasn't. It was 26. And the vice president could break a 13-13 tie. Now, where's the supermajority in that? Where's the necessity for the party not in power to come along and play nice? Don't tell Joe. No, everybody tell Joe. Maybe there needs to be a hashtag. Hashtag ahistorical Joe. It's infuriating. Especially because, you know, it's my home state. Well, the framers put that in there. No!
The House was designed to be hot as a firecracker. We were designed to cool it off. And that's the founding fathers. It was a brilliant, brilliant strategy they looked at. So why can't we try to make this work? If you have the violent swings every time you have a party change, then we will have no consistency whatsoever. So we have to get back to getting it into the committees, let the committee chair and the members of those committees work it in jurisdictions, whichever.
Hold the hell on. Violent swings? Really? Providing income support for the people who take care of elderly Americans is a violent swing? You know, Joe Manchin must get up every day and thank God for Ron Johnson. Kind of the way West Virginia used to get up every day and thank God for Mississippi. You know, there's at least somebody is worse. But here we are. Violent swings. Wanting to make sure that everybody who is eligible to vote legally can vote legally is a violent swing. I guess Black Lives Matter and the Antifa is just gonna come down, and I don't know, maybe they'll deploy their special underwater demolitions crew and take a brace and bit and drill a hole in the bottom of Joe's fucking houseboat or something. Brooga brooga, violent extremist, violent swings. I mean, we kind of got those violent swings already by virtue of who we have on the Supreme Court. You know, a guy credibly accused of sexual assault, unrefuted, with all kinds of sketchy financial affairs and dealings going on in the background. And a handmaid, a woman who has to ask her husband for permission to think. And those people, by the way, in case you didn't know, are on the verge of turning loose what at least one person is referring to as a guns apocalypse. Talking about Ian Millhiser, who recently reported on an upcoming case that the Supreme Court has decided to hear called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Corlett. Now, because Mitch McConnell already blew up the filibuster for Supreme Court purposes. We've got a mad, we've got crazy people. We've got dangerous, not particularly well-intentioned people sitting on the Supreme Court just itching to tell Americans to go out and buy a goddamn bazooka because that's what the framers wanted, you know, back when they were sitting around figuring out that they were going to, that the House was going to be hot as a firecracker and not have partisanship and they were going to cool shit off in the Senate. And everybody gets a gun. Can you conceive of any way that anything but that this comes out anything but 5-4 at the very least? Because New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. versus Corlett has to do with a longstanding, over 100 years, statute in the state of New York that said, if you want to carry a gun, you got to get a permit. You got to prove to the government, which, of course, is we the people, that you need to carry a gun. If you want a gun, you get a permit. And to get the permit, you have to show, in the language of the statute, quote-unquote, proper cause. You can't just say, well, I want a gun because it is a stand-in replacement for my tiny, almost microscopic penis. I like to call it blue steel. But now, knowing what the hell is the composition is of this Supreme Court gone wild, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. decided it was a good time to sue the government so that we can turn loose a little bit more freedom. And by freedom, I mean death. And everybody, because the import of this case, you know, it's one state statute, but it's going to have national implications. Kind of like Obergefell versus Ohio wound up having implications, positive implications, for every other state in the nation. It made it possible for people who love each other to just get married. Now, this is the polar opposite. This is the this is the hell that people like Amy COVID Barrett and Brat Kavanaugh, and of course Ann's boy Neil, who shouldn't be on the court in the first place because Merrick Garland got screwed. This is what they're going to unleash on the country: nationwide, unregulated, permitless concealed carry, where all kinds of paranoid white men can walk around packing heat where nobody can see it and just shoot people if they feel like they're somehow threatened. I don't like the way you talk about my guns. Got it? Yeah. And I say white males, because it's primarily white males. I mean, a lot of white women in the country, too. And yet, oddly enough, although they can go and buy all the guns that they want, for some reason or another, you don't see paranoid, even conservative paranoid white women running around shooting up bowling alleys and movie theaters and grocery stores and Walmarts and schools and nightclubs and elementary schools. Reckon why is that? It is a puzzlement. But anyway, that's a bit of a digression, but I think it's okay. Joe Manchin apparently thinks that the agenda being put forward by the Biden administration is a violent political swing. Yeah, paving roads, making sure sick people can go to the doctor. It's a violent swing, says Joe.
We were designed to cool it off. And that's the founding fathers. It was a brilliant, brilliant strategy they looked at. So why can't we try to make this work? If you have the violent swings every time you have a party change, then we will have no consistency whatsoever. So we have to get back to getting it into the committees, let the committee chair and the members of those committees work it.
We won't have any consistency. Because I guess consistency is more important than people being able to vote. Consistency is more important than telling cops on a federal level, from a federal standpoint, telling cops that they can't kneel on a black man's neck for 9 fucking minutes or more. Consistency. I guess that's his new word. His old favorite word used to be balance. Now it's consistency. Well, I mean, a Senate that is consistently awful is better than having a Senate that has violent swings toward letting people go to the doctor. I guess it would be a violent swing if we set it up so people could go to the college if they wanted to without going into ruinous levels of debt. Joe didn't come out of West Virginia University with ruinous levels of debt. Joe didn't come out of West Virginia University probably with any debt at all. Even when you think about what money used to be worth, and brought forward to present value, college used to be cheap in state at West Virginia University. But that was for Joe's generation. Not these young whippersnappers who won't get off his lawn. Jesus. It's infuriating.
In jurisdictions, whichever it comes to, I'm chairman of energy. Energy projects will come to me.
Thanks for reminding. Energy projects will come to Joe. So too will anything having to do with climate change. And do you know what will happen to that climate change legislation when it comes to Joe? In his Natural Resources Committee of the Senate? It'll die. He'll kill it. He'll probably put out another commercial with him taking a rifle gun and shooting it, nailing it to a tree and just shooting it, like he did with the cap and trade bill that was so full of coal welfare that it was an embarrassment, billions of dollars in coal company welfare. But even that wasn't enough. So Joe tacked it to a tree and took his rifle gun and shot it and killed it. And do please just remember who we have to thank for Joe Manchin being the chairman of Senate Natural Resources. You know who that is, right? Not being a bitch, but you know who that is. Because that senator wanted bigger things than to actually exercise control over whether or not, and it's the or not part that's worrisome these days, whether or not planet Earth would remain a decent place for the human species to try to continue to live. Don't want to piss anybody off, so I won't name names. But there's an answer. So Joe wants consistency. And Joe will have his consistency even if he has to completely imagine entire portions of America's civic history that never existed anywhere but inside the rather hollow and echoey empty places that between Joe's ears. Yeah. Because that's, where we are. Filibuster Now, Matt in San Francisco adds, when the census with a census redistricting coming up and the Republicans at the helm in many states, we stand to lose the House simply by the lines they draw. That's why they're not changing their ways. They already know how to cheat their way back into power. This may be our only opportunity to get the ship righted before the next Republican scam takes hold, and we have to fight that battle. Racist Joe Manchin may be single-handedly ensuring our future is locked in continuous paralysis. Folks don't seem to realize our Democratic Republic is on the brink of being lost for good. And that's the truth. But you know what? If we kill it, if democracy dies, but we have consistency, Joe Manchin will be happier than a pig in shit. The best friend fascists have, King Joe. He loves violent racist sprach. He's a crooked bastard. He doesn't become a Republican. If he, the only reason is because Addison told him not to. Maybe told him it wasn't necessary. Because, of course, the Republicans have been ballyhooing and braying and giggling up their sleeves and giggling out loud because Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and a couple of others, but mainly Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, are doing all the Republicans' work for them. They don't have to stand there and say, no, no, hell no. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are doing the job for him. Primarily Joe Manchin. And now he's out there courting Lisa Murkowski in Alaska saying that, why, shucks, yeah, she's a Republican I'd endorse for re-election. I'd do that in a heartbeat. God. Mm-hmm. Joe, Dave number 11 adds, is despicable. Heinlein's rational anarchy requires exceptional intellect for minority rule government to work. I am familiar with Heinlein's rational anarchy. In fact, he presented, Robert A. Heinlein did, a much more palatable idea of what would be recognized today as libertarianism than Ayn Rand ever did. Rational anarchy is presented as a theory, I think, first in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, which is an absolutely engaging and fascinating science fiction novel about what future revolution might look like. And later on, Richard K. Morgan would build on it with his vision of something that happened on one of his planets called Harlan's World, with what became known as the unsettlement. Great term, that. Dave number 11, if you haven't read the Takeshi Kovacs trilogy, do please. I think you'll enjoy it. The asides and the sort of background world that he creates are just brilliant. But Dave number 11 adds, Joe Manchin is the type of person Heinlein would put in the airlock and eject. Lindsey Graham is the yammerhead that gets marginalized, not featured on Sunday shows. Unlike The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, this isn't fiction. In the real world, these fools will always have the upper hand. The filibuster sucks. Majority rule does not. Thank you for that, Dave. That's a great great pull from the bag of contemplative speculative fiction that we call sci-fi. Yeah, maybe the airlock, but the other thing he does in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, he wants to take all these people who worry about consistency and balance and have ideas and put them on a committee. Professor De La Paz, Bernardo De La Paz, says, oh yeah, take the talkers and put them on a committee and make sure they have a lot of shit to talk about. They will never trouble you again because they won't even be able to figure out what they want for lunch. Filibuster does suck, Dave number 11. Thank you. Majority rule doesn't. And the, you know, but the other side is the Senate is so fundamentally broken and broken from jump. You know, the idea that Wyoming has as many senators as California is the essence of not democracy. It's oligarchy. And so here he is, and he's not going to be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water, he will not be moved.
But back to the majority leader, they put it on the floor with an open amendment process that's germane. Once you go through all of that, you know, Bob Byrd, when he was majority leader, he'd keep us here Friday night, Saturday, until we got it.
The best. Yeah, see, you weren't there. Bob Byrd, when he was majority leader, used to keep us here Friday night, Saturday. The only reason you're there, Joe, is because Bob Byrd is dead. And I guess just by way of a postscript to all of this, the clip was tweeted by a woman by the name of Sarah Longwell, who is, she tells us, because she's got a blue check mark on Twitter, CEO of Longwell Partners, publisher, the Bulwark, founder of something, and for the rule of law, mom of two boys, avoided Twitter until 2018. Well, good for you, Sarah. And the rest of her Twitter timeline is pretty respectable, but wow, did she blow it on this one. Because she tweeted this clip from Manchin saying, Joe Manchin is right, don't at me. And then, of course, everybody added her. What I'm trying to figure out is what part of what he said Sarah Longwell, who is sort of an ancillary nominee this evening, thought was right. Because I do know my history. And I know that most of his palaver was just bilious horse shit that came from the time-worn fantasies of his own imagination. I don't know. I'm wondering, says Steve in New York, whether the turnover in the House of Lords or the Senate is greater. And even with the filibuster, what exactly did the GOP not get before 2021? Precisely. And they all, yeah, but Harry Reid blew up the filibuster for lower court nominees, and then using that as precedent, our lord and master, Chinless Mitch McConnell, well, he blew it up for purposes of the Supreme Court. And Republicans are more than happy to blow up the filibuster, and by God, they will next time they get power. Well, y'all wanted to. Here, we're going to do it. Y'all were a bunch of sissies. Didn't have the guts. Had that pusillanimous little fuck Joe Manchin, that Kirsten Sinema over there saying they want to preserve the Senate and preserve the filibuster and save them. Well, fuck all y'all. We going to blow it up. Watch them. They will. Joe Manchin is not right, Ms. Longwell. Not by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, maybe there's a part of the clip where he says, I am Joe Manchin. I'll give you Joe Manchin's right on that. But everything else? No. A historical hogwash, pure and simple. Ugh. And so the filibuster has now consumed an hour and 9 minutes. And thank you to our friend Perware for knocking out half of Joey and Giraffe's challenge. We started the evening at $680. And it would be great to finish April to the good, but we got to knock some of this out if we're going to do that. And so if 10 more bucks come in, we will have it down to $640. And please don't leave a challenge lying on the table if you possibly can avoid it. So that's our first nominee and our first ancillary nominee. We will get to our next nominee in short order. Lamar the Magnificent says, fuck play nice. I have one word, maybe two, to poor Joe. As a Democrat, I'm sick and tired of people like you asking me to play nice in the sandbox while the Republicans kick sand in my face. I say when they play nice in the sandbox, I won't be trying to kick them in the balls. There we go. It's kind of like back when the Give 'em Hell Harry became a thing in American civic life. You're talking about Harry Truman, of course, and he said, "Give 'em hell, Harry," and he said, "I just give 'em the truth, and they think it's hell." Yeah. But meanwhile, someone... I was wrong, yeah. Hashtag ahistorical Joe is too thinky for messaging, Arthur says. Maybe Joe don't know is more catchy. Ooh, that's good. I liked it. Joe don't know. Hashtag Joe don't know. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy has just finished off the challenge. Thank you very kindly indeed, and that means that we're now down to $635. $335, and we're done with last week. And then we can work on this week. So thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. You do so much, and it is so appreciated. And like I said, someone is on the stress line, and let's find out who that someone is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Who is this?
Who is this?
Well, that's a fine question.
Yeah, it is. What's happening, Todd?
What? Damn! Come on, man. Can't like play with this a little bit.
I'm sorry. I just know the voices.
Wait, that's fucked up. No, I did not say that. No. Strike that from.
I mean, if you'd come on with the, you know, give Joe Manchin a chance. Just give the man a chance. I would have played with that.
Well, look, you know what? That's why I'm calling this motherfucker, man. Oh God, no, I didn't mean to curse.
No, it's the internet. Do it while you can.
Joe, that's the other.
Before they regulate us out of existence or something, I don't know.
These fuckers are going full fascist, but that's another conversation. But I have to agree with the former silent and now magnificent Lamar. Yeah. You know, excuse me. You know, fuck this playing nice shit. And they have had every opportunity in the world to show that they're decent and willing to work within the bounds of what was supposed to be a genteel type of operation, and they have refused to do so. And this is not just 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. This is a longitudinal observation. So, you know, fuck that.
It's got breadth both in time and space.
Well, right. That's why you're the host, because you can express that very succinctly. Exactly. Right. So, no, we ain't got no time for that. You know, by the way, how's all this winning feel? Have you stopped a maggot and tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, or whatever hurt he, she?
Actually, there was a moment.
Come on. Spill it.
So I had to run down to the little local hardware store. Because I just did not have it in me to go all the way across the river, you know, fight for a parking space at Lowe's, put on the mask, go into Lowe's, hang around like a fucking streetwalker for a half an hour waiting for somebody to come up and ask if they can help me. No slur on streetwalkers. And so I just went to the little hardware store thing. Well, you know, they might have it. This thing. And I'm standing there checking out, and I look over, and, you know, because they've got that there at the counter, and, you know, this place has been there for, Jesus, 70 years or more. I mean, the floor. Yeah, the classic old hardware store. You know what? It's got that unique smell. The wood planks in the flooring are, they're so worn from so many feet going across them for so many years. The color of the wood has changed, and it's almost slicker than a fucking bowling alley. You know.
Right.
And so up at the counter, they got all the little gym cracks and things that you're going to, that you're going to impulse purchase, that kind of thing. You know, little candies and maybe a, maybe some half runner seeds or some something to plant or.
Mm-hmm.
And there in the basket is a long neck beer bottle koozie. And you know what it said, right?
True.
2020.
And it was red and white, right?
Oh, yeah. And I just picked it up and looked at it for a minute, kind of held it like I was holding a spider.
You touched it?
And said, well, can't imagine there's going to be a run on these anymore. Might be time to remainder it, and just flicked it back into the basket. You got the look I got. Jesus Christ, if looks could kill, I would have gone away in pieces in a basket.
Did it get quiet as a motherfucker in
there? Oh, yeah. There was, let's see, how would you put it in a literary sense, Todd? A silence descended. A pall fell over the room.
Upon the room. The din of silence was deafening.
And then, you know, just because I had to double down, I mean, I learned this. You know, I mean, he lost bigly. And still with the look. They want the money, but they would like me to leave. He don't love America. Because I'm still getting misgendered there. I don't love America. But it was a moment. And now I'm so bad off. Not far from my house, there's a house that's on a hill. And they got like three of those big-ass banners. You know, the ones that you stake out in your yard. Probably spent $100 a piece on them.
Oh, the nice ones. Okay.
Trump, and these are blue. Trump 2020. And now it's like political Tourette's or something. Because every time I go past it, I go, he lost! You fucking lost! Take it down! And sometimes with the windows open, but the house is set back from the road, so I don't have to worry. And I don't, you know, I don't have a big, you know, yard banner that says, you know, Trump lost or get over it. No. But there's a used car lot up the road. and they got their Trump flags a-flying. Yeah. Yeah, Steve in New York just pointed out, in the hardware store, that pregnant pause went into labor. Yes, wait. That was quality. Yeah, you could have heard a pin drop. Well, don't reckon there's going to be a lot more call for these.
You know, these folks are just, they're dislocated. They're grasping it. They just can't figure it out. Grasping it at ideological straws. But look, even still, it was too close for me. If he had just been quiet, he could have won if he had just shut his damn mouth. It was his to lose, but thank God not. This winning, this normalcy feels so fucking good.
Yeah, did you see the latest? There's apparently a proposal, Tracy hit me to it. And I kind of had to reread it a couple of times to see if I was reading the right thing. New proposal to lower Medicare age to 50 could be a lifeline to millions.
Hmm.
What? A group of 21 Democratic senators have reintroduced legislation in Congress to lower the qualifying age for Medicare from 65 to 50. Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin said, when it comes to providing affordable health care for every American, there is more we must do right now to change the status quo, improve our health care system, and lower costs. It would get the health care coverage to people who need it at a price they can afford. And this is coming from, you know, this is coming from Yahoo Finance, so it's, you know, not, you know, The Onion.
Well, look, 50 is the old, the former 35. You know, you got, you know, 50 is not old anymore, but people still.
Well, I'd like to hear if there's any sign on from the Biden administration.
Well, we'll see. But I you know what? I'm so glad that this man has evolved. He really, I mean, damn. I'm feeling everybody I talk to, you know, in our camp, you know, and, well, I mean, it, of course everything could be better, but still, I mean, he is actually getting the right people in and doing, it seems to be trying to do the right thing, you know?
Well, it's that whole go big or go home thing. And apparently Joe Biden is not interested in going home.
No, I think he's interested. See, I'm totally in his camp. Even if he doesn't do a great job, I'm in his camp only because he was the classic. He kept trying. He was always in third place, but he was always there, you know, backbone of the team, but he could never quite, you know, get the brass ring. He finally got the brass ring. And in the interim, you know, he had opportunity to be around people that maybe he didn't quite understand as much as he thought he did. And now he's had time to contemplate, because he's making decisions that, and I'm just saying this from someone from that area.
Well, yeah. And see, you know, if he, you said even if he fails at this point in time, given what he is putting out there for consideration, he can't fail. He is doing some next level FDR shit. It's clear that he has a vision for America. That's a vision that, you know, I think is an America you and I would, and the Horn Family Community Congregation would like to see, Todd. And so if this stuff doesn't come to pass, it will not be Joe Biden's fault. You know, this is Joe Biden, who was in the Senate since God was a baby, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be any of this horse shit about that they ran on Obama, saying, well, you know, he's barely in the Senate any time at all, don't know nothing about governing nothing, and he's not out there playing canasta and pinochle and playing golf with the Republican leadership of the Congress, because then we'd get some shit done. You know, silly fuckers. I mean, you remember that, right?
Yes. I remember.
Well, you can't say that about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's having senators over all the time, and he's doing that shoulder rubbing, hail fella, well met, noogie shit, you know, and he's doing all of the stuff the way you do it. But Republicans ain't going to have any of it. If he put together an infrastructure bill that included, you know, $100 million for every Republican senator to get free caviar, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the rest of their lives, they still wouldn't sign on, because Democrat.
Yes. See? Yes. Exactly. That's the part. Because, you know, we had this conversation, I think maybe last time we talked about, well, I don't know, maybe before last time, the last couple times, about they still don't be fooled about who's going to pay for it and how we're going to pay for it. Because there's a couple of big reasons, and I'm going to reiterate, the money is as cheap as it will ever get. Even though we print our own money, it's all weird. You know, you still have to pay it back eventually, whatever. It's probably never going to happen. But technically, that money is at zero or less. I mean, literally, because remember, our federal government is the best. People don't believe that. Well, I'm not going to get in. You know what I'm saying. They don't get the same interest rate as you do when you Chase or your whatever.
No, they're not paying the interest rate I'm paying on the car. No.
Right. No. Our federal government is the best credit risk on the planet Earth. Why do you think everyone wants American dollars? You take an
ding,
American
ding, 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 ding.
So, right. And we're not on the gold standard. So, you know, really all we have is our word and our military to back it up. And nobody wants to mess with that. And so that's just the way it is. That's why people don't get sucked up into this debt thing. Not deficit, but debt. Because it doesn't matter.
And you see, one of the leading proponents of that silly shit is Joe Manchin. Well, I just don't know how we're going to afford it.
No, fuck that. They just got a 20% raise. They just for doing nothing. See, this is people need to hear the full story and look up Friedman. Let me tell you something. About 2 months ago.
You mean Uncle Milty?
Listen, I had never seen this before. And on YouTube, his old series, You Choose. This is like some type of documentary series he had in the 80s. Somehow I missed it, or I wasn't allowed to watch TV a lot of part. You know, in boarding school, we weren't allowed to have TVs. We only watch that shit on the weekends. But apparently he had a series to try to, you know, bolster, you know, his concept of what. I had never really seen him in action like that. He was going into like inner city, you know, New York and Hartford was not in the 80s, man. New York and Hartford, and, you know, it was rugged. Bridgeport was fucked up. Ugh. So anyway, but and it looks good on paper, right? Except that he would just for some reason never, ever, ever take into account racism and redlining. And well, how are you really going to do this? See, that was never addressed. And you know, I'm saying this from I'm not going to go in. I don't know if I'm going to be like that again anymore. I'm just saying this for someone who kind of pays attention to things. And I've been schooled in, you know, Durkheim, and I understand. This fucker, it just purposely eliminates major variables. Okay? So we, and you know, come on, you know where I'm going with this. It's fed into that whole Reagan shit. But I'm not trying to get off on the tangent. But yeah. So this is the new time. We had to seize the day. I guess that's my point. I feel like we had to seize the day. What do you think?
No, what's the line from the Scottish play? If 'twere done, 'twere best done quickly.
Look,
because there was reference made. I think it was Matt in San Francisco to what's coming with the. Demographic changes from the census, you know, the census that was all fucked up. And I'm so old, I remember during the 2016 campaign when people were hollering, "Ooh, Hillary, brooga, brooga, brooga." And I was the one who was saying, listen, okay, so you're not upset about the Supreme Court. You're not that worked up about it. Okay, that's whatever. Because we had people like that. But I said, what about the census? This president will control the census, and this president will, by controlling the census, will control whether we have an honest one or a fake one. Well, here we are. And for the first time in 100 years or more, California is going to lose a House seat. Texas is picking up two.
You just touched on something that.
Now you think those two seats in Texas are going to be gerrymandered in such a way as to give a voice to say new Texans turning 18 who don't vote Republican, who don't look like the people that vote Republican? No, those things are going to be gerrymandered to look like a goddamn malaria germ. And they will be there for the purpose of putting a white crazy man in power. And so California's going to have to figure out who they're going to. Now, the ultimate irony would be if California can figure out a way to, say, make Doug LaMalfa, Sparky's Congress critter, the one who has to go. But odds are it'll probably be in one of the larger metropolitan areas, say, you know, L.A., Bay Area.
But D.C. can't be a state because, you know, they just can't.
It's all the damn Negroes.
Well, I mean, they have a case. I will say, I mean, I can be impartial. Okay. They have a case because it's a constitutional issue, but it defies common sense at this point. I mean, D.C. is spread out. It is a city. It is. I mean, it's a lot going on.
Well, the whole reason for the existence of D.C., and most people see it, you know, it's got those pretty straight lines on the, you know, on the Maryland side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it used to be a complete square.
Yeah, but they had to carve it out of Virginia.
Virginia, they carved it out of Virginia, and Virginia said, fuck this, we want ours back. And that's why it's got nice straight lines on two sides and the other, and then it's just a triangle, a poorly drawn triangle formed by the Potomac River as the hypotenuse.
Because
Virginia clawed their land back because, well, I don't know. I mean, are they going to have slavery in D.C.? You know, the Virginia gentleman and all that shit. But the original reason for the creation of D.C., Todd, was the notion, because at the time of the drafting of the framing, the debate over the ratification of the Constitution, all of these states were behaving like the petty little kingdoms that they are. And so the framers were nervous, to say the least, because already there were assholes from New Hampshire, and there were assholes from South Carolina, and assholes from Georgia, and everybody was trying to get theirs. And the capital had already moved from Philly to New York, and they wanted to have a safe space, Todd.
Yeah, like a free state.
And they didn't want any state claiming power over the federal government.
Right. It was supposed to be a nice, impartial area where people free, where you could come and just and bring your ideas, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, that was, and it was not unsound reasoning when you consider the behavior of the states back then. I mean, part of the reason for the drafting of the Constitution was because democracy was breaking out all over the damn place, and they couldn't have that.
You got to herd those cats.
And so they come up, and lo and behold, I think that George Washington makes a bundle because it was his land that wound up being Washington, D.C. Oh, no, gentlemen, I have some fine swampland by the Potomac for placing our federal government. What, do you want to name it after me? But the impulse behind it was solid, but we could still have that. Okay, for instance, because this just comes to mind, D.C. legalized weed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guess where you still can't smoke weed? D.C. And what I mean by that is in the federal zone, the federalized area that is the capital and the capital complexes, weed is still very much illegal because it is controlled by the federal government. So when we talk about statehood for D.C., we're not talking about all of D.C. Capitol Hill will not be in the state of District of Columbia. Capitol Hill will remain under federal government control. But, you know, out in Adams Morgan,
mm-hmm.
you know, further up Capitol Hill, you know, the Thomas Circle and all of that that will be the state of D.C. And I wonder what we name it. I'm not being a smartass. I wonder what we name it, because they named it a district specifically to make clear that it was not a state.
State of Columbia.
Would make sense.
I mean, that's just off the top of my head. I don't know. They have to figure it out, you know. But I love the way you painted that picture, you know. you know, and it's, well, it's so much. You just put a lot of meat on that bone there. But, you know, we are going through some serious growing pains. I mean, we have folks who just still, I mean, these statistics, if this data is correct, how many people still believe that the George Floyd case was, you know, misinterpreted?
Well, don't say people, say white people, because that's what the survey was.
Well, they're people.
Sure, they're people, but they are a specific subset of people.
Well,
you know, the same people think that the Chauvin trial was a miscarriage of justice. Those same people also think that there's a child pedophile face peeling center in the basement of a pizza joint in D.C. that doesn't have a basement.
For some reason, the Venn diagram program just won't, you know, the dust won't settle.
It just draws one circle over top of another over top of another.
I tell you. It's really something, and they wonder why are you people upset? Like, well, you just won't get it. But you know, really, when you were talking about Manchin's part of the problem. Now here he is. You know what? He's taking money from anybody who's going to give it to him. He's taking money to be quiet. He's taking money to speak up. He's taking money from every which way because he has no backbone.
Okay, so you just opened a big old broad barn door. Let's ask that question. What corporations, what industries benefit from the continuation of the filibuster? You know, it's just the classic cui bono, Todd.
It is. But see, when you lay it out like that, you know, kind of in a flat way, you know, take your emotion out of it. Right. Who? The multinational corporations, the energy. And wait, was it Nancy Pelosi? Because usually the speaker, the head person, names who's on what committee. Who was it, her?
Well, no, it was, we're talking about committees and we're talking about the Senate, so that would be... nominally Chuck Schumer, but that's not the person to whom I was referring. Took me a minute to catch up. But
I just got, you know what I mean.
There was another senator who repeatedly has stated that climate change is the most important issue facing not just this nation, but humanity as a whole. And energy and natural resources in the Senate is going to have jurisdiction over just about any climate change bill that comes down the pike. And that senator was in line to be chairman of Senate Energy and Natural Resources. But that senator decided that senator didn't want that committee chairmanship, where that senator would have been in charge of this issue, the single most important issue facing the nation and humanity as in general. That senator didn't want that job. That senator wanted a more prestigious committee chairmanship, and so that senator noped right out of that committee chairmanship and went elsewhere. And Joe Manchin said, "What? Me? I'm going to be the chair? I'm going to get to kill all the climate change bills just like I shot that one time? How nice."
From the most corrupt...
Have you figured out who the senator is yet? Don't make me say it out loud, because I'll get hate mail.
No, I'm wrong too much. I just want to listen.
Bernie did that.
Why in the world did he do that?
Because he wanted control over budget. He's got the chairmanship of the budget committee. Which is absolutely, which it turns out is absolutely meaningless, because as long as Joe Manchin is willing to sit there and go, nope, it doesn't matter what great ideas Bernie puts forward through his chairmanship and budget. Because Joe's just going to say no.
We can't afford it. We're poor.
That's a deep thought exercise, though. I mean, on the face of it, yeah, you want to go for the brass ring where the money is. Control the money, the budget. But natural resources. See, that's you got to dig a little deeper. Because this guy, this man, he has just finagled his way into this position. It's disgusting.
So the funny thing is, those two, we are told, despise each other. Joe hates Bernie. Bernie hates Joe. But it begins to feel a little bit like Saturday Night Wrestling down to the Armory, Todd. Because for somebody that hates somebody, giving him the one thing in the world he wanted most, that's an interesting way to hate somebody.
Well, maybe
you grok? I had to bring grok into the conversation because we had Heinlein references earlier.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Now, you know, I can't remember if I cannot recall. If Philip Heinlein is that guy's brother. He used to come up in class a lot. And Philip Heinlein, and I think that is his brother. Now I think, I don't know. I'm never on the computer when I talk to you because I just can't manage all that. But I had the joy of the chair in some of my labs, Philip Heinlein in Whitehall, and I didn't really know it at the time because he was so low key. But it turns out
older guy.
He's old as shit now. Yeah, because he's probably in his 80s now, but he's fit.
Because Robert Heinlein was in the United States Naval Academy, I think, in 1934.
Well, maybe that was his father. I don't know. I didn't even come up in class. But anyway, that's just nostalgia. It's not Heinlein. You don't hear that name. Yeah, you know, you just don't hear that name a lot. But, I heard you talk about that. So when is the administration going to figure out they just have, you know, like we talked about before, you just have to pay Manchin off?
I think they already know it. They're just trying to come up with the number.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this something we have to? Can we keep? You know, it's one of those Dr. Evil things. You know, $1 million, sir. That's not a lot of money these days. Oh. $1 billion. It's all a matter of figuring out how much he needs. I mean, he just wants to, you know, Joe just wants to wet his beak. But there's a difference between, you know, putting the dipping the beak in the sugar water, and just sitting there with your beak under the sugar water, sucking up sugar water until you can't breathe anymore. It's going to have to be a really good number.
It's going to have to be a good number because now he understands royalties, and it's going to be a formula. It's going to be some cash and then some royalties and then some, you know, positions.
It's that old divorce language. It's going to have to be enough to let Joe live at have the standard of living to which he has become accustomed.
Yeah, you hit the nail on. Yeah, that's too funny.
So, you know, what it's going to entail is him looking at Joe Biden saying, does it hurt yet? Well, no, you ain't enough.
Well, that was too easy. Right, anymore. Okay.
And it reminds me, I knew a woman once who really took her ex to the cleaners for good reason. And he owned a Porsche, and she took the Porsche. And then she got a vanity plate. And on her vanity plate, it said simply, was his.
Yeah, that's not nice.
That's where that's where Joe Manchin's headed. That's what he wants. He wants it to be painful. He, among other things, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, fungible stuff. He wants Joe Biden to get down on his knees and grovel. And he wants Joe Biden to take out signature elements of the bills that he's presenting. Like, you know, infrastructure care for caregivers and care workers for elderly Americans. Joe wants that commie shit gone. Because that's commie shit, Todd. You know?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with that. This new jargon that has just popped up in the last, I don't know, 6 years. These people just tossing around socialism and communism, like.
Yeah, well, I mean, from the Joe Manchin standpoint and from the Republican standpoint, which are often indistinguishable. Anything that is good for people who have to work and scrounge and scrape and dig for a living is communism. Now, it's not communism when we take the wealth of the nation and give it away to corporations that then stash the cash in the Cayman Islands. That's not communism. That's Merkel. That's American exceptionalism, Todd.
Well,
kind of sucks, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it sucks because I really have a totally different view on that. You know, I may sound young and I may sound old, but I'm old enough to remember. You know, folks, you can go to a good state school, college, university, whatever. Get your loans. Even if you wanted to live off, you could live off campus. And I didn't even notice, but some folks were on food stamps. I never did because I wasn't hungry. So I didn't even know anything. But you could get through, and we were making, if you adjust the amount of money that we were making in our part-time jobs, because everybody had a job, you know, a little part-time job. Hopefully it was in towards a profession that you were striving for. You know, so you can get some experience. And everything worked out. Everybody was happy. I mean, it was just like this. No, you can't. You have people who trying to support a household on $10 an hour.
Can't be done.
That was probably $2 and something an hour then. In our just post formative years, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
And see, that's when Reagan came in, and these people who lauded Reagan, he just fucked everything up because he promised us, he said, look, we're going to have to make these concessions now because we're doing this, we're trying to do that, and the Soviets and this and that. And the union said, okay.
And by the way, well, Nani, those of you who are in the, you're busy going to college and drinking beer and all of that, and you're not paying attention, so y'all won't mind if we fuck you, will you? Because we're gonna fuck you so good or bad. You're not gonna like it, but you're not paying attention anyway, so, you know. And he and Tip O'Neill shook hands and ha 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 ha. Oh, we certainly fucked those little early Gen Xers, didn't we? Ha 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 ha. They're never going to collect their Social Security. Ha 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 ha. We're going to make them work till they die. Ha 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 ha. And suddenly I'm old enough that it matters. And I'm not crazy about the fucking I took. I was paying attention back then, though. I knew I was getting fucked.
That's the thing. Come on, we're of the same we're of the same cohort. We saw this shit. It's like, wait a minute. So, you know, man, come on. We were making okay money. we were making okay money, a part-time job. We were able to support, you know, have a little house.
You know what? Making 25,000 bucks a year in the late 80s was not terrible. It wasn't rocket ship money, but it wasn't terrible, Todd.
If you had a goal, it wasn't terrible. It was temporary.
I know a guy who was making $30,000 a year working for a billiard company. And he felt like he was in tall cotton. You know, got them fluffy little cotton bowls just rubbing on his butt.
I'm laughing because I remember the first time I heard that I didn't know what it meant, and the coworker said, "Boy, you want high cotton?" And I looked at him, I was like, "The fuck are you talking about?" He said, "You're not from around here." I said, "No." But so yeah, I know what high cotton means now. But yeah, so right. But I'm saying this shit happened quick, man. Every couple of years it was just more concessions, more. This is back to that Friedman shit. It did not work. Stop this nonsense with the trickle-down stuff. Where are the jobs? I mean, we got no... Yeah, everybody has a job, but what are you making?
Yeah.
You know, they did away with the benefits? Come on. This is nonsense. But anyway, so it's a new day now, and people are feeling good. And, I don't know what to say about you got a little criminal enterprise running your state, man.
No. Wait a minute. No, this is the part of the program where you try to say something about West Virginia, but I come back with No, I know where you live. This Uh-oh. Is the story of Tracy Diaz. Back before she got tossed off of Twitter, she was known as Tracy Beans, B-E-A-N-Z. And she has a new job. Now, Tracy, not our Tracy, this is Tracy Diaz. Tracy is a Republican activist, and she is one of the leading lights or lowlifes who helped make QAnon fly all around the world, and especially in the country. So that you got a bunch of grunting and hooting idiots barking and howling through the Capitol on January 6th looking for the basement where the children are that are being prepared to be eaten by Hillary. That one bit of wackadoodle bullshit where the container ship that was stuck in the Suez Canal, it was all right. Full of children, and it was financed by Hillary Clinton. Well, she started this all. She didn't start it, but she propelled it as a means of making it, you know, turning it into a political weapon, a tool. And she has a new job, Todd.
Wait, I'm trying to catch up. There is no way in hell you're trying to tell me that tanker in the Suez Canal that was stuck. You're making an illustrative.
No, I mean no. That was a rumor that got spread. It's full of children that Hillary Clinton has paid for to come up so she can drink their blood and wear their faces.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. So now I'm...
Okay, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, sure, why not?
I mean, seriously, I can't... I'm being serious. If this is how these people feel, that's their reality. So please continue, but I just need to know these things before I can go down this hole.
Yeah, I know. Because it's also wackadoodle that... If you listen, you got no, nobody in their right mind. Well, they're not in their right mind. They're crazier than a sprayed roach. They've been huffing MAGAism for 4 fucking years, and their brains ain't coming back. And so enter Tracy Diaz, the former Tracy Beans, who spread QAnon bullshit like manure over the fertile fields of Republicanism. And she's got a new job. She won by a landslide one of the top jobs in the GOP in, of course, South Carolina.
It ain't so, Joe.
It's so. She is going to be a somebody with the Horry County Republicans.
Oh.
And she's not on Twitter, so she's over on Telegram. And she's so proud. She said, "We are off to the races. It is possible. You can do it, too. It's our time."
Who was our?
Well, you know, Q. And the maggots. And the people who are entirely supportive of kidnapping infants and tearing them off their mother's breast and, you know, putting them in concentration camps. She got 8 million views on QAnon crap.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot. When it was just starting out as a nothing, and she saw it and ran with it.
All right. Well, you know, wow. I mean, I'm so happy. I'm very happy that our administration now, this administration, not my president, the president, not my administration, the administration, you know, they seem to be receptive to other views and, you know, other views.
Yeah, that's what makes them so loathsome to the maggots.
Well, you know, critical thinking just doesn't appeal to a certain segment of our population. And
Todd, the maggots had 4 years of unalloyed white supremacy. And it's
white. I'm not trying to make any joke. I was going to make a joke, man, but this shit ain't funny anymore. We knew this was going to happen.
But they're having a monumental sad now because it's going away. Kinda, maybe, sorta, hopefully.
And people still have to understand that just because we had a two-term Negro-like president.
Did you say Negro-like or Negro-light?
K-E.
Okay, just checking.
Yes. Right. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, my diction wasn't perfect.
No, you can see where that would be a thing.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
I mean, don't you remember all the Republicans calling him a Hafrican for 8 years?
Well, that's just, see, this is what I don't understand. This is where we are. And I'm talking to my white brothers and sisters, and my everybody.
Talk.
Mostly my white brothers. It's like, you know, folks, we just have to come to terms with. Let's just hit. Let me break out the parchment and get the quill. I just killed the turkey. I got some nice quills, and I have plenty of ink. And we're gonna.
That nice little pen knife. You know that's why they're called pen knives, right?
Yes.
Because
keep that fucking sharp.
Yeah, you gotta have your pen knife so that you can sharpen your turkey quill.
And
you know, your pen.
Knife. You're gonna get me off on the tangent. These fuckers could write. You don't see any ink drops on these documents. I mean,
That's what the sand was for.
You have no idea how much time I spend looking at this shit. I mean, it's Scantron 3000. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, you know, this is the thing. Number one, black people in America are not monolithic. Number one, and I should have paused more, but this is all right. Number one, because America is not monolithic. Okay, you just like you had black folk whose ancestors came over here, you know, hundreds of years ago. You have black people whose ancestors came over here 50, 10, whatever, in between. You know, remember Liberia? I mean, it's just a lot. So let's put that on the table. Number two, every black person you see is not a Democrat. There are many, many black Republicans. They just don't make a lot of noise. Because that usually
because they got theirs and the check's clearing.
The check's clearing. They said this is they have come to terms with what this system is. You see, that's the end. That is really the end of this position argument. Not arguing blah 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 argument, but this position. Right. They have already said, okay, this is what the system is. Capitalism is dirty business. Because remember, capitalism means if you have a corporation, the whole reason you have a corporation is to insulate yourself from any liability personally.
Precisely.
And if I'm speaking out of turn, let me know.
Oh no.
And I know you will, because we'll get into that. Right. So we have to understand that. So. In other words, the system is set up for you to make money at any cost. It doesn't matter if you hurt anybody, whatever. You make that money. The onus is on whoever buys shit from you. If they get hurt, whatever, they feel like they've been cheated, the onus is on them to prove that. And that's where tort law comes in. So the whole system is kind of crooked. So they figure, well, we're going to buy into the system. And that's why there were, in fact, you know, a number of black slave owners for different reasons. Some was to make money. Some was to get married. Some was to kind of work, you know, you have to work the system that you have. What are you supposed to do? So that's what a lot of these black Republicans have done. They said, look, this is the system. And there's a subset of that where you the system and try to change it from within, because now you have different, you know, you have companies that now corporations be, you know, where you can at least try to be a little civil about it. So, but and that, you know, that's subset of under number two. Number three, you know, it doesn't matter with black folk, because when we get in the car at night, we're just another nigga.
Well, the timing is not lost on me, for instance, of the Andrew Brown slaughter. 42-year-old black man, doesn't have a gun, Elizabeth City, North Carolina. I reported the story last week. Well, the death certificate is out now, and he died from a penetrating gunshot wound of the head. The cops killed him a day after the Chauvin verdict came in. It's almost as though the police in Elizabeth City don't be getting uppity. Just because one cop got convicted, man, he's still got an appeal. He's probably never going to see he's going to see the inside of a jail, but not for that long. And we're still going to kill us some people until somebody makes us stop.
Well, see, this is the other thing. What there's two other right. See, this falls into what we've been talking about on this parchment paper with the fresh quill. Now look, black people are not here to make white people feel okay about their shittiness. Okay, so just fucking divorce yourself of that fucking idea. Fuck that. If we ain't smiling, it ain't. Just don't worry about it. We're not here to make you feel fucking good. If somebody says you're a racist, it means you're a fucking racist.
Play racist games, win racist prizes.
Don't question that shit. You're already behind the eight ball. So for someone to even speak on that means you fucked up. Most times. Now, there of course, there's always a certain segment of the population. They're not happy with anybody. We all know those people. And it has nothing to do with predicament or ethnicity in this country. I'm not talking about that. So I'm not trying to get too particular. But most times, people don't just say you're racist for no reason.
Precisely. And would you do me a favor real quick, please? I had a note from Darlene a few minutes ago. And if I crossed a line, I want to be told. But Darlene wrote a little bit ago and said, okay, I'm a stupid. In other words, I'm from New England and have no idea what you're in the high cotton or however you said it means. Please enlighten me on that esoteric idiom.
High cotton means you're living good. I didn't know it either. I'm not from here.
There is a more crass expression. You are shitting in high cotton.
Well, I didn't know that part.
But there is, and I thought about it, and I regretted the usage of the term, and I apologize, Todd. Because it is an older term too. The harvesting of cotton is backbreaking labor. And the lower it is to the ground, the harder it is. If you are in high cotton, you are not in as bad a situation.
Oh, you got it easy. Oh, I see.
The defecatory reference has to do with the fluffy little cotton balls touching your little old butt. I apologize. I'm not going to do one of those Republican apologies. If I offended it, I apologize. I will henceforward excise that from my vocabulary or from my library of cliches.
Even when one
tries to be conscious, one still fucks up. Because it is all around us. It is endemic to the language.
Got that right.
You know, it comes from the same time period as eating high on the hog.
Yep.
Eating high on the hogs, it means that you're not going home with the trotters and try to make a meal out of some pig's feet.
Yep. You got bacon. You got that good stuff.
You're high on the hog. You got the jowl. The best bacon on the whole critter is the jowl.
Yep. See, you ask your Vietnamese friend.
Yeah, I mean that's why. Here in Appalachia, that's why we eat hog jowl every New Year's. You start out the year eating high on the hog. Because you got to work a lot harder to make something out of a bunch of pig's feet. Because, they're feet. They're delicious, but they're still feet.
Oh, my God.
And we know where a hog's feet, go.
That's what I'm laughing at. That's why. And people suck on those feet like nobody's...
Because they're good. Are you kidding me? Pickled pig's feet? If I could have a jar of pickled pig's feet and drop a couple of ramps in them right now and just stick them in the fridge and let them sit? Oh!
You know, every corner store in North Philly has a... back in the day when I was young, they had the big jar of pickled pig feet. And in certain supermarkets, that the smell, it will smoke. Oh, my God.
I know. And see, we've somehow sort of inadvertently transitioned to food porn out of an apology that I made. So just please tell me you accept the apology. That really matters to me.
Oh, Well, I mean, I don't even know what you're apologizing
for. Because I used a very undeniably fucking racist reference, and I'm sorry.
All right. Oh, okay. All right. And let me go. Please let me go quickly back to the parchment, because this is probably the
okay. And the reason you're so careful with the parchment is because it's expensive and edible. But go ahead.
There we go. You know, I noticed that a lot of white folk. All right. I noticed that some white folk are uncomfortable. They don't know whether to say black or African American or Negro or nigger, or, you know, they're not quite sure what, you know, how to address folk. And I always, because this comes up. And, you know, it won't come up maybe in certain lines of work, but anyway, it comes up. So I always say this, because I'm different. Everyone's different. But I say that just like your name. I say, I would suggest asking the person, how would you like to be addressed?
That's helpful.
Like some people don't like to be called by their first name. If I don't know you, I frankly, in a professional setting, I don't want you calling me by my first name.
I am old enough, Todd, that I can remember a time when if a senator was appearing on your news program, you would refer to him, and in the time when I was still interviewing political types, I used the proper informal term. But now, you know, Joe shows up on our filthy morning habit, and it's, "Hi, Joe. Hey, Joe. How are you, Joe? How are you? Well, Mika, I just love you."
Yeah, see, no.
Senator, he is a fucking senator, okay? You know, right. Again, for some reason, it's Austin Powers night on the horn. But, you know, I didn't go through 4 years of evil medical school for you to call me Mister.
That's how I was brought up. Because, you know, I have a whole lot of folks with a whole lot of letters behind their name, like in my direct family. And people you don't even know, but they did shit. And it's out of respect, but see, everyone is different, just like your name. Like, some people do not want to be called by their first name.
Oh, one of the sweetest things I've experienced in recent memory is somebody who cared enough to look at me and said, "What are your pronouns?"
See, that's called community.
And it made me proud, and I said, "She, her."
See, we have to reinforce that type of behavior, right? And you felt good about that, didn't you?
I walked on air.
See?
It was beautiful. It wasn't me walking around with a chip on my shoulder. It was somebody else giving enough of a damn about me to want to be civil. And I guess we live in a time now where you have to want to be civil. It's not just something we do for each other.
Simple. See how simple, and that would solve a lot of this stuff that's going. Just be,
maybe it's a poor reflection, and I don't think they would have beaten me, but if I had ever called my second grade teacher Clara, I would have been lectured within an inch of my life, including the time-worn phrases like, "You were not raised that way." I have a dear friend who was a teacher. She wasn't that much older than me when I was in high school. She was brand new to the teaching gig. But by God, she was Mrs. then. And I'm damned if I can call her by her first name now. Mm-hmm. Even though we are nominally equals. It's hard for me to do that. And that's probably because authoritarianism was drilled into my mind, and oh, God. Yeah. Oh, let me do a quick thank you, because I got two to send out. Clarence jumped in. Thank you, Clarence. And Clarence jumped in and took us down to 605, and Brian jumped in and took us down to 580. So thank you both, Clarence and Brian, so very much. I'm sorry I was a little slow on the announcement, but thank you so very much. So now we're $280 away with from being done with last week and last Friday. Jeremy says, Robin, if we called you Mister, that'd be just ignorant. See what I've done there? I see what you've done. That was deliberately spelled IGNANT.
Ignorant is a real thing.
Yes.
That's a real thing.
Well, it's kind of like the difference between naked and naked.
Ignorant and there's enigma.
Ooh, I'm not getting anywhere near that one. But, you know, naked is the state of having no clothing on. Naked is having no clothing on and being damned well up to something.
Well, that's that community commodity thing. So,
that too. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, back to the high cotton. Scott in San Diego has some input. The expression also references the general lack of restroom or rest, even in the cotton fields of the Old South. Yeah.
Ask Scott if he has his favorite soda tonight. It seemed like he had trouble getting the soda he liked. I don't know why.
Oh, it was the Diet Right with Splenda instead of aspartame.
That sounds like some highly specialized stuff.
Well, it kind of is. Yeah. I just realized that over the course of the winter, my last can of Diet Grapico froze and burst.
Damn.
It hurt. Well, when I next make it south, I'm gonna have enough room in the trunk to bring back, you know, 8 or 10 cases or so, you know, because it's just wonderful. Although I'm not drinking that much soda. You know. Okay, so here's the thing. I said when I started the program I was in an extremely good mood. I still am. It was beautiful.
How do you know?
It was beautiful here today, and it's going to be beautiful and clear tonight, and there's going to be a full pink supermoon. Really? I get a pink supermoon? Thank you, goddess. But part of feeling so damn good was to just get out under the sun and push the mower and run the weed eater and clear out some crap that I've been meaning to clear out for a long damn time and, you know, asked for a little help and never got it and just said, fuck it, doing it. And it was glorious. And here's the other thing that went with it. And I think you will agree with me because it's even hotter where you are than me. A beverage, whatever it is, that is chilled on physical ice is colder and more refreshing by far than something pulled from a refrigerator.
Yep.
Is that real or is that just me?
No. And look, we're old enough. I hate to say this, but once again, see, we're young enough but old enough. We're right. We're in that sweet spot. See,
we're in the wheelhouse. We're
in the wheelhouse. Right. Come on, man. I'm peak. Now I'm feeling better. I had my first shot, and I'm back.
Oh, see, I was shoving that lawnmower, and something popped into my head, Todd, and I went, you know what? Almost 60 is the new almost 40, damn it.
Damn right. Shit. I look younger than my one number.
Frankly, not to, you know, God knows, I know what happens every time I mention it, but I've already mentioned the pink moon, so, you know, I'm already fucked. But...
Don't go pink.
Having your chemistry right means everything in the world. And, you know, I ain't talking about dropping acid or anything. I'm just...
No.
Oh, just this, just this sense of just stuff being right.
See, maybe you wear our, you know, homeostasis, right? We were talking about brainstem shit, right?
Yep.
It's your homeostasis. You're where you're supposed to be.
Yeah, it's like Jude sent along a photo of some beautiful clouds over her house and says, Robin, dear, your and Todd's dialogue are necessary along with the consciousness of other Horn supporters. It reveals unique perspectives that are required to keep us wide open to understanding, which leads to truth. So here's a photo of the sky above me as I'm listening. A reminder that there's always an inviting opening, hence the darkened clouds cannot push out the beauty of the enclosed radiant blue area, at least this very moment, which is exactly where we are. That's just freaking beautiful. I love getting that stuff from you. And she adds that you are right on the mark. To seek a world that encompasses all that is healthy and good out there, the disciplined ability to be focused leads to critical thinking and is the conduit for change. Let that one roll around for a little while. And by the way, Jude just got us down to 570. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so very much. And that was just me taking a breath, because Jude reminds me to breathe and sent a picture of some gorgeous white lilacs.
Oh.
Yep.
Jude is something. So I know you don't like, well, I think I remember you saying you did not like the wisteria.
No, I like wisteria.
Okay.
I like all of it. I'm partial. I've got a bank that sits alongside the road, and I was driving by another place, and they had some phlox, and I was thinking, God, I would love to plant phlox and just let them take over that bank.
What is that? I'm not familiar.
Creeping phlox. Phlox.
What does it look like?
It stays real close to the ground. And it just puts out these beautiful pink and light purple blossoms about this time of year. And so if it's crept over your bank, you've just got this spilling slope of gorgeous color. Maybe they don't grow. No, I know they grow down there. I've seen it.
So it kind of looks like morning glory a little bit, maybe. I don't know.
It's real. Look at it. Look it up later. They're kind of pricey, though. I'd really like to get some started on my bank and just let them take over. Because they will. They'll cover an area. They grow slowly, but they grow inexorably.
Well, and you know, got the... Vincas are going nicely, and you know, the things are doing nicely right here. The azaleas came out, but I'm gonna say this: if you want to invest in a shrub that will be long lasting, and you can take it inside if someone won't die the first couple years, but if you invest like $15 or $20, right, you'll have this forever. It's called Mexican petunia. I mentioned it before, but It kind of has a stem like a bamboo, but every day it produces new flowers.
Oh, wow.
Every day. And they drop off, and every day you get a new one. And they grow inside. Like, you can have it, like, you know, behind the light, like behind the sofa or whatever, like we used to do. But you can put it in the ground. If you have it in the right place, it will survive the winter. Comes back every year. You know, it's nice to have some pretty plants around, you know, if you have, even in an apartment, you know, it's nice to have living things.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing that I love are clematis.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well.
But to go back for a minute, just for a minute.
Yeah, we're way off base.
I don't know that there are any bases anymore. We go where the conversation takes us, and that's how this is supposed to work. You were talking earlier about the trouble of trying to get people to use your terms. You remember when Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was testifying, and the Republicans kept calling him Mr. Vindman?
Mm-hmm.
And he had to correct him. It's Lieutenant Colonel.
Yes.
Well, we got to go to North Carolina for this one, Todd, where they've got a city zoning commission for the Greensboro City Council. And the Greensboro City Council just voted unanimously to remove Tony Collins from the zoning commission because they had a Zoom meeting. And one of the people speaking at the meeting was a woman named Dr. Carrie Rosario. Now, she's a woman of color, and she's got a gig as an associate professor at UNC Greensboro.
Yeah.
And she's got a PhD in public health.
Uh-oh.
And she raised the issue of a development near her home. And so Tony Collins called on her and called her Mrs. Rosario.
Oh, no, 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 no.
And she said, it's Dr. Rosario, thank you, sir. And he kept on calling her Mrs. Rosario and called her Carrie.
After that?
Yeah. And then after she kept correcting him, he finally said, well, you know, it doesn't really matter. Well, I guess it does matter. Tony Collins said, nah, it doesn't matter. It matters.
Okay. See, that's what
I mean, the years that you pour into and Jesus Christ, defending a master's and then defending a doctoral? No, it matters. See, that's harder work than Tony Collins has ever probably done in his miserable, misbegotten life.
When you hear these terms, microaggression, that's
ding, 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 ding. That's exactly what that is.
That's on the upper scale of a microaggression, because that's almost overt. What if you correct someone? This is what I'm saying, I'm going to make an effort not to be personal, but when you're black and you get to a certain level, you have to go through a whole lot of shit. A whole lot of shit. And they don't even know sometimes, where you come from. And you may have more education and experience and a lot of other things than the people who are judging you. And they say stupid ass shit. And you're just like, inside, what? Ugh. Yeah.
If I call you Dr. Rosario and you say it's okay, call me Carrie, then it's okay.
It's okay.
But if you're appearing in your professional capacity, Dr. Fauci, even Rand Paul and that thing on his head call him Dr. Fauci because, something probably awful would happen if he just called him, hey, Tony.
And I'm going to tell you, in this climate, this is my opinion, but when you brought up Vindman, the only part they left out was you nigger lover. See, that's part of this component that we're dealing with now. And it's so unfortunate that we are back, and remember, we are 100 years from the summer, because you can round off. We're talking about 100 years; you can round off shit from the Red Summer. Okay, the Red Summer. The Red Summer was when white folks went crazy because black people had finally started to have a second generation of prosperity following Reconstruction, and white people were just like, "Oh, fuck that." These goddamn niggers are just, they've taken over. They're too uppity. And hey, look at that. They got pianos and cars and they're going to school and and it's complicated because, I'm trying not to be biased. I'm saying it's complicated only because of my research in this state. They didn't want anyone to be educated, really. you know, much less black people, but they really weren't interested in having the population, you know, to educate.
No, and you know what? Ancillary to that, because the conversation goes all over the place, there is something, I think you and I have even talked about it in the past, there's something in the, called the Moral Act. Not M-O-R-A-L, M-O-R-R-I-L-L, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Named after a member of Congress who wanted to make it possible for more people to obtain higher education. And in the years before the Civil War, it was introduced, and the South said, no, 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 we can't have, no, goodness, we got perfectly good universities down here that only the right people can afford to go to. Because you got, like, 1831, University of Alabama, the University of Mississippi, you got, and those were big deals at the time, and, you know, the University of Georgia and University of North Carolina, Duke it out, see what I did there, Duke, over which one is the oldest, it had to, it's one of those things that had to wait until the South was out of the room, literally, and they passed it, Lincoln signed it into law, and we have land-grant universities as a result. I think Clemson is a land-grant university, West Virginia University is a land-grant university, Penn State is a land-grant university.
Yep.
Auburn is a land-grant university. But we had to wait until the right people weren't in the room so that we could actually accomplish something that resembled progress.
And now look where we are. What if you just had a baby? You got like a 3-year-old and you're thinking, you know, because time flies. I'm like, oh, okay, how are we going to pay for college?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you don't send your kids to college, I mean, they, you know, I'm not saying.
No, enough. we're 1 for 4. It grieves me.
I wanted to take a year off, and they almost.
Oh, they no, they weren't. No, I tried that shit too. I just want to backpack around Europe. No. When you've got a job and you earn your own money, you can backpack anywhere you want to go. But your ass is going to college.
We don't need a break. I remember that. What a fool. But anyway.
Oh, by the way, Darlene with a good observation says, I'm not sure the Rand Paul versus Fauci example is a good one or illustrative. As much as they despise one another, you're still talking about two privileged white guys. Just saying. Just speaking truth. Yeah. They saved that shit. They saved that shit for the people that they think deserve it. Because when you will not use doctor in front of the name of a woman of color, you're saying what you think of her doctor, her doctorate. Probably got it in basket weaving or something like that.
You know, I remember my mother coming home after defending and her being in tears because she had, you know, it just, and of course, you know, I'm biased. I don't know exactly what happened. You know, she had a star all over. And this was at Penn.
And they didn't fuck around.
No. You know, and it just gave, but you know, she ended up, you know what? She was the one who really invented charter schools. It started off as schools within a school. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Like she convinced the city to make, you know, these two floors are going to be a separate school within the school. And then we're going to have different, wrote the whole, charter, everything. Because that's what it is, a charter. Like, these are the rules.
Yeah. Like a corporate charter. And like then corporations got hold of it and said, wait, we can make a buck.
We can make a... But see, there's nothing wrong with making a buck, but spread it around.
That's don't make your buck at the expense. I mean, I've been following this story that's been showing up twice now on my filthy morning habit, and I got to admit, it upsets me. The bit of controversy started with an editorial by Cornel West, Dr. Cornel West, and I think the guy's name is Jeremy Tate, who is an advocate for teaching the classics. And the op-ed, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because this I got this list, and I usually never get to the stuff.
Is this about the classics and Howard?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? They've eliminated their degree in the classics. And it was the only HBCU that still had a classics program.
Yeah.
From an HBCU with a degree in, you know, Greek, Latin and Greek, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. And Dr. West was positively apoplectic.
Well, you can't, that's incongruent. You can't do that then. No. You can't have one without the other.
And so this morning they had on the president of Howard.
Wait, you can't be serious. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but no, you cannot have a well-rounded education without that, period.
But somehow or another, and this goes back to a really, really old gripe of mine, and that is the notion of treating higher education as merely a means to an end, where you just you go and you learn how to do a thing.
Well, then go to business school. Fuck that.
But you know, I was always taught that the purpose of higher education, the purpose of education, was to teach you how to think.
Right.
And the higher up you go, it's more layers. They teach you how to, because you know, primary education is primary education because you are learning first things. How to read, how to write, how to count.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe it ain't so primary anymore.
but then you start learning how to learn. Once you've got that basic, that core of knowledge, you start learning how to learn. And everything is, an education is a process whereby we build, you know, You start with your base, and you build out from it, and you build on layers of learning. And by the time they, you know, kick you out of college and hand you something written on parchment, they feel fairly confident in the idea that maybe you're going to keep learning for the rest of your life, which is the goal. And so it just bummed me out when. And the excuse that the president, well, it's not like we're not going to teach Latin anymore. We're just not going to let you get a degree in it. Well, then you're not really taking it seriously, are you? Because you've got to be able to take enough of it. First, you've got to get the basics, learning how to read and write it, before you're ever out there reading the really complex shit. Caesar's grammar is approachable once you have the basics of Latin grammar. And so they hand you Caesar's commentaries on the Gallic Wars. And Gallia est omnis divisa and partes tres.
There's more to Latin than Latin.
Yeah, the entire English language, for starters. 70% of every word that comes out of our English-speaking mouths has a Latin derivative, is a derivative of Latin.
You know what? It's a hazing process. You may come in kicking and screaming, but if you appreciate it at the end, you have completed your hazing and you understand the importance of it, or you'll be a drag. Or I shouldn't say that. No, not a drag. You didn't get it. I'll put it like that. You didn't get it, because there is no way that you are going to be as you, I totally agree, said, a lifetime learner. And that's what you meant.
Yeah, exactly. And so that, you know, that's just wrong. Especially for an institution like Howard.
Howard is
on a par with Harvard. I think they're still teaching Latin at Harvard.
So what is this, backlash? What is this supposed to be? I don't understand.
Oh, I think it's a number of things. There is a school of thought that says all things European are bad.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
That somehow or another, it's bad to teach all this stuff that's perceived as being white and European, when Rome itself was a polyglot community of everybody from the known world.
Oh, okay. Can we stop right there for one second? Let's stop right there for one second. Because, serious, this is important. All right. Now my degree is in psychology and neuroscience, but they didn't call it neuroscience then. But anyway, you have to understand terms. And you see, everything about our body is basically based on a Latin term. So, in other words, you're going to hobble these students from the beginning. And they're just being hobbled.
Along the way, wiping out a significant portion of a history that includes people of color.
Well, that's what I was going
Rome
to
had a, Rome had a black emperor.
Right, the Mediterranean. Come on, that's ridiculous. That is.
There were. We know from the archaeological record, there were black legionnaires who were posted to and living in Roman Britain.
There was a black pope.
Wrote Latin.
Come on, man. This is ridiculous.
But this is how shit falls apart. Because we want our kids, under the best of, we want our kids to go off and be as bright as, you know, the people that we revere for their intelligence and having cooked up this whole system of government, blah, 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 blah. But we damn well don't want to educate them that way. You know what you have? If you want to, you know, if you want to be a Latin scholar, if you somehow managed to go to a high school that teaches Latin and you fell in love with it, well, you're going to have to be well off enough to go to an Ivy or one of the other big name schools. Because they're at Busted Knuckle State Community College. They ain't going to teach no Latin because it ain't in the fucking budget. And don't too many people want it anyway.
Robin, there's not a day that doesn't go by where I'll hear something, see something like, oh, and I'll know what it means because I had a little Latin.
Ding.
I mean, they say, oh, it's a dead language. No, it's not dead. That's like saying, oh, you're taking that in the statue, you're trying to erase history. How the fuck have you erased history? Did you get on Google a day? Type in that motherfucker's name. Oh, look, it's right there. Motherfucker.
Yeah, see, that was my feeling. Oh. And the president of Harvard, the president of Howard really didn't have, you know, he was out of his element. I mean, he's an administrator. But I guess one of the things it does mean is that there just aren't that many kids going to Howard wanting to major in Latin.
It doesn't matter. Sometimes you have to eat your fucking oatmeal. Eat the gruel. The gruel is good for you.
Yeah, and just because there aren't that many students, does that mean we don't serve the ones that do? You know, we. Because, you know, I'm on the board at Howard.
I know, you're a stalker.
We said we wouldn't talk about that. Oh, but I do. I want to go back for a minute because the whole something on ice tastes is just better than something from the fridge. You know, I haven't been drinking pop. I've been drinking this, you know, basically soda water with a little bit of fruit essence to it. Mm-hmm. But today, after I got myself all hot and sweaty, mowing and weed eating and whatnot, something inside me said, thirsty. And the something next to the something inside of me said, and I don't want a seltzer. My body said, give me ice, freaking cold, pure water. It was heavenly, Todd. I know that sounds just really stupid, but my God, was it wonderful. And so I filled up my little bougie bottle with ice and purified water. And that's what the squeaking you've been hearing is. Hear that?
Yeah.
Well, that's my bougie water bottle.
Wait a minute. Was that before or after you shot the Yeti cooler?
But it was nice. And see, the best part of all of this is that I got to tidy up around my little outdoor kitchen.
Uh-oh, here we go.
And so I'm going to have an outdoor sink soon. Because we're going to have running water in the house, and I'm really excited.
Uh-oh, you're going to have a grill. Boy, you got to run the line out there.
And you know what I saw at the store the other day? You know, the people that made the griddle, Blackstone?
Yeah.
Which a very dear friend provided for us. That person knows who that person is. Well, Blackstone now makes an outdoor kitchen thing that folds up and collapses and you can carry it away like a suitcase.
Damn.
But it folds up and you got a work area, you got a cutting area, you got shelves, you got storage. I saw that and I'm stoked. Because part of all of this is that I'm working on my chops for the day when the horn in comes. And it's gonna be good.
You gotta get some gravel. Some posts, some gravel, some string. Level it out. Concrete. Cinder blocks. No, I'm just kidding. But yes, I'm not talking over you, man. No.
I've been looking at that big wide open green space that I've cleaned up, and yeah. I've talked with Brother Deacon Asa about this before, and I was like, you know what I'd like to have? I'd like to have a smokehouse that doubles as a sauna.
No.
I want a smokehouse. I want to grind my own sausage and smoke pork loins and, you know.
Well, you can do it. You know.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah, well, it would be better than fantastic. Are you kidding? And then, yeah. You know. There's nothing like that aroma, you know, around what used to be Smithfield. And you coming down, you know, south of D.C., you pass Jarrett.
Oh, yeah.
And, boy, then that, I mean, this is like back in the 70s and 80s. You could smell it. I mean, people were just smoking meat like nobody mm-hmm. could.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, it's special.
I mean, if you want to live like that, if you want to live like a king, that's your business.
Well, we're not quite at living like royalty, but.
No, I'm just kidding, man. I'm just
super stoked for the coming of outdoor cooking season, and I think it's going to be fun. Okay, I've been called out. I walked right into that one. Brother Deacon Asa was waiting. I want to grind my own sausage. Sounds really dirty, Robin. You sure you want to say it that way? Not anymore, I don't. No. I want to make my... Never mind. Y'all just wait for me to walk into one of these, don't you? You do. You just wait.
I tell you what, there's not a grinder big enough.
You're going to hell for that, you know, right?
You know what? It wasn't that bad.
Barbecue was good. Kind of had a pineapple flavor. I didn't ask where it came from.
Oh, shit. But man, you know what? Smoked, even I'm thinking about the smoked salmon. I mean, can you imagine having a rack, you know, like a native man having a whole salmon?
I've got a dear friend who is going through treatment for breast cancer. And her doctors have told her to eat all the salmon she wants. So I have promised her a whole plank of salmon smoked a la Asa.
Man.
And I'm so ready for that.
Boy, that, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Bagels and lox will, if you're having a bad day, have some bagels and lox, don't you?
Yeah, you'll just perk right up.
You'll perk up. It's something to it. Well, look, you know,
here we are again. Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, but well, look, well, it doesn't matter now.
You got nothing to be sorry for. I hope I didn't walk all over all your topics.
No, when you started talking about Representative Manchin. You know, and then thinking about who he's associated with, and you know, they just have to, the best they did, give him what he needs to shut his ass up and get him out of the way, man. We have things to do. This can be the greatest time. It's already feeling great. Come on. Look how much time we wasted with that jackass, and we have to deal with these sympathizers. We're not done with this.
By the way, meanwhile, you know, corporations and governments and whatnot are all talking about how, you know what, we're not going to have any more internal combustion engines by 2040. This might be a good time to remind people that we have till 2029 or less. And we just fucked off for the last 4 years. This is like being assigned, this is being assigned the term paper and just hanging out by the keg over there with Paul, Eddie Munster, Ryan until, you know, a week before it's due. And then, you know, maybe I should go to the library.
No. Now look, we're really at, I mean, I hate to say like good and evil, but we're people are.
No, that's where we are. That's where we are. Oh, and I screwed up again. I've got to be better at this, but somebody is on the stress line and I'm not going to leave them hanging. So let me bring them on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Robin. This is Scott. Hi, Todd.
Scott.
Hello? Yeah, baby. What's happening?
How you doing, man?
I'm all right. I'm late to the party. I just emailed
Robin. No, I'm late
Robin.
To the button. That's on me, Scott.
Oh. No, literally. I didn't get up until like 40 minutes ago. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just emailed Robin an obituary and a link to a documentary about Bob Fass, who just died a couple of days ago, who was the longtime Pacifica radio host on WBAI-FM in New York City. And I think you had said that you had spent some time up there and maybe you had heard him on the radio years back. So check out the obit, celebrate his life, and then watch the documentary Radio Unnameable is the name of it, if people want to check it out. He was really one of the pioneers of underground freeform radio. And, you know, I never got a chance to meet him or hear him because I've only spent a tiny bit of time in New York City. But I've known of his work for some years, and he is a tip to the old rabbit ears or headphones to Bob Fass. He was a straight shooter, as it were. So you can check that out. And Bob, yeah, can too.
We have a connection. Because
you and Bob?
No. Well, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. But our dear friend Arnold, who calls the program every once in a while, has worked closely with him for years and years and years. And so my condolences go out to our dear friend Arnold.
Well, over the years, he interviewed anybody who was anybody in the culture that we might be interested in, artists and musicians and actors and stuff. And somewhere, just thousands and thousands of interview tapes, I hope those find a home and are digitized so that the world can listen to those tapes. Because that is, you know, you may as well say from 1960 until maybe 10 years ago, that is a chunk of America that cannot be lost to the sands of times. And you'll see that if you watch it in the documentary.
Well, I'm going to have to check in with Arnold because I know he's going to be distraught.
Yeah, but anyway, I sent the two links to you, Robin, and you can send them on to Todd.
Okay, I will.
And Arnold even. But and I know it's kind of a veering off topic-wise, but I heard Todd, and I thought I heard him mention that he had spent time in New York, and even if he's never heard of him, he can discover the late Bob Fass, because he was quite a character from what I've come to understand. So how are you doing, Todd? I don't think I've heard your dulcet tones for many a moon.
I'm okay, and I don't know. It feels like maybe a lot's been going on, and maybe a not lot. I don't know. I guess there's a lot going on in this end, but everything is okay. We're moving forward with life. And WBAI, yeah. You know, there were a lot of radio personalities in the New York City metropolitan area in the 80s. I was there in the early 80s. Frankie Crocker and
Frankie. You
know. Yeah, but you're talking about WBAI AM. That's AM, I think.
BAI is FM.
That was FM. Okay. So I don't actually recall that person. But you know, usually it was like early morning radio, you know, the R&B, and they used to always talk about Roseland, you know, and that was the place to be. But, you know, that was when New York City was the city. It was gritty. You know, and all the stories are true. But Scott,
it was something that should be mentioned, and Devin mentioned it to me just now in a message. Bob Fass was working right up through this year, and Arnold was the one who was helping him do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, then he's in the documentary, I think. I didn't notice, the name didn't register with me, but they showed a lot of people, volunteers, you know, because it was a shoestring sort of operation.
Yeah.
Do you know the story of Pacifica Radio?
Some of it, and we'll have to save it for another day because we're there at that time. And I wanted to share one thing with both of you and the whole family community congregation, because our buddy Robert in Australia keeps me up to date on the awesome stuff that is produced by the folks who make the Honest Government ads. I've played some of these in the past, and God, they're wonderful. And so I thought it would be a good time to share it, because we brought up the issue of electric vehicles a couple of minutes ago. And Robert was right there with the link, so you got to check this out.
Hi, I'm from the Australian Government, here to announce our latest plan to take a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and flush it down the dunny. You see, the car industry is currently undergoing an epoch-defining revolution, from the combustion engine to electric vehicles, EVs. This presents a unique chance to rebuild our manufacturing industry, upskill our workforce, improve our air quality, whilst tackling the climate crisis and advancing human civilization. Of course, on realizing this, we said, nah, let's instead orchestrate a fear campaign about EVs so we can score points off Labor. Remember how we told you their EV policy would end the weekend because EVs can't tow your boat? Well, here's an EV towing a boat. And here's one beating a race car whilst towing another car. Here's one towing a train. And here's another one towing a fucking jetliner. But hey, our bullshit helped us win the last election. And that's why we're now ready to unveil our own EV policy. Introducing the Future Fuels Strategy, or FFS for short. And no, that's not satire. It's what we really called it. Checkmate, Honest Government ad shitheads. Does our EV policy include incentives to help you afford an EV? No. That would make us like governments that actually encourage EVs, like Norway, which exempts them from paying taxes, road tolls and parking fees. That's why EVs now make up 75% of new car sales there. And other countries with EV incentives are catching up. In Australia, we haven't even reached 1%. A bit like our vaccine rollout. FFS. Does it recommend electrifying our government fleet, like the US government just committed to, and which would kickstart a secondhand market of more affordable EVs? Yes. Are we going to do it? Nah.
Hey, time out. We did a good thing. The Australians are jealous. Yay!
FFS. Does it set a target to phase out sales of new petrol and diesel cars like other countries have by 2030? 35? 2040? Nope. That's why car companies aren't sending us their best and most affordable EV models or opening factories here to build EVs like the 30 new models GM has just announced. Which is why when it comes to powering choice, creating jobs and economic growth, our EV policy will ensure approximately... fuck all. There are many more reasons why we should be supporting EVs that strengthen our national security by making us less dependent on foreign oil, that save us shit tons in health costs to treat illnesses linked to car exhaust fumes, such as dementia and mental illness in kids. They're even linked to lower IQ, which might explain why you keep re-electing us. And of course, they're key to tackling the climate crisis, since transport is the third biggest source of emissions in Australia, most of it from cars. But why do all that when instead we can prolong our dependence on oil, make us the dumping ground for the world's dirtiest, least efficient cars, make your kids sicker and dumber, and make us the world's biggest fucking losers by failing to embrace a new technology? FFS. The best part of our total lack of leadership on EVs is that it allows other dickheads to come up with dumbass policies. Hello, I'm from the Victorian government, where we're about to introduce a tax on EVs. Yep, while the rest of the world is scrambling to help people afford their first EV, we're slapping another $5,000 onto their lifetime cost. We're saying we need this tax to pay for roads, since EV drivers won't pay tax on petrol. To which you might say, hey, that's like taxing ex-smokers for no longer paying tax on tobacco. You might also say, the fuel excise hasn't directly funded roads since 1959, and besides, it's a federal tax. To which we say, correct. This is just a grubby cash grab. That's what's most important. And that's what must be done.
Beers. Beers. Get on the beers. Beers.
Hurry, we'll be voting on the EV tax soon. So unless you contact your local MP to stop this bullshit, we'll become the first government in the world to make it harder to afford an EV. Victorian government and Australian government. We stopped these. Authorised by the Department for Taxing Clean Air.
Jesus, those folks are good.
Brilliant, dear.
And I love it. That's for real. FFS, Future Fuel Strategy, for fuck's sake. That's gorgeous.
There's an outfit out here, Robin. There's an outfit out here that's buying TV time and maybe radio time to bemoan the fact that California wants to have electric vehicles. And they're saying, well, you know, it'll be X number of chargers, and your rent will go up if you're a renter, because your landlord will have to put a charger in. and just anti progress, anti reality. I'll get that and send it to you.
Oh,
when
let
I can
me
get
guess. Caitlyn Jenner signed off on it. No, for fuck's sake.
Probably.
Oh, and
probably.
By the way, a little update because what was it, last week or the week before? We had a good laugh over the haunted Victorian child Chihuahua. Darlene sent us along. Dog that put family through demonic Chihuahua hellscape adopted after viral Facebook post. Prancer, a haunted Victorian child in the body of a small dog that hates men and children, is living it up in Connecticut with his new mom, and there aren't any guys around. Happy baby. Happy endings. Wow, what an evening this has turned into. Todd, thank you. Thank you for all the things you brought to the table, and you too, Scott. Yeah, Todd.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, the funny thing is, even if you split that argument down the middle, how can you argue against a hybrid? And I'm telling you.
Ah, well, it won't tow your boat. You can't go skiing on the weekend.
Man, look. These people are out of, they just can't stand it.
Now, see, I'm part of the reason I'm so excited after hearing Sparky talk about, you know, battery powered lawn stuff. I have taken another step toward reducing the carbon footprint, at least nominally. And you know what? Part of the reason I was so happy is after mowing the lawn today, with a battery powered lawnmower that did everything I needed it to do. All those years of heaving all that metal and all that iron around, you know, shoving a mower. This thing's light as a feather. It's quieter than a vacuum cleaner. And it cuts like a demon.
See, and you don't have to go to the store to get fuel. And we need infrastructure because the future is electricity. That's part of our infrastructure.
Yeah.
Scott,
don't run over
there?
The Chihuahua.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the ghost of Nikola Tesla is going, for fuck's sake.
See? Yeah, well, look, man, Scott, you know what? San Diego is a hell of a place. And I'm just going to say, I hope you enjoy every second that you have out there. Cause I
yeah, except
mom.
For the shooting in the gas lamp the other day. Yeah. Robin read about that last week. God damn. No, it wasn't me either.
Wait,
yeah, I get what you mean.
Was it Chula Vista?
No, it was in the gas lamp, the big tourist district.
Yeah.
Downtown, block trip from the ballpark.
Oh, you said that. That's up to you.
Some idiot, some idiot with a ghost gun. Remember ghost guns? The do-it-yourself, build-it-yourself gun kits? Right. Just basically, it's literally firing at random at people he don't know on one of the, you know, most commercially and touristy districts in the fucking city. And they caught him. A person or two died. Three or four were wounded. I mean, these things have become so endemic.
Yeah, I was going to say, listen to that. Yeah, a person or two died. A couple were wounded.
Yeah, they don't even register.
You know what? We're becoming numb to this.
By design, and that's why I mentioned the upcoming Supreme Court case. They're going to normalize everybody packing heat everywhere they go. And the question is, when everybody's packing heat everywhere they go, I guess it'll be a radical act not to pack heat everywhere you go.
You're going, we're all going, but I really have to say this. In these times, especially right now, no matter how you feel about another person, no matter how you think about another person, we have to all put forth that extra effort to be nice as hell to who you think is an asshole. Be nice to them. Be nice to everyone. Just because, you know, when you exude positivity, you get it back. And, you know, and I think because of everything, maybe a lot of people have lost that. There's something to that, and I'm not getting into all the other this stuff you see on the internet. I'm just talking about plain old physics. And I mean, take my word for it. Just be nice. Just try to be nice. You can know where people are at. You can know they're in the fucking Klan. But, you know, be nice to them. You don't have to agree with them.
Because after they get done, because after the Supreme Court gets done, they're all going to have guns. And eventually it'll be okay for felons to have guns.
I understand what you said. And it's scary as shit. What the fuck, man? This is exactly what Russia wants. We're going to be a weakened nation now. We are on fucking life support. What the fuck, man? We have everything we need. This is the best country in the world. Why are we fucking this shit up? We have beds, baths, and beyond.
There's too many people enjoying the best country in the world. What we need is more misery. As if we don't have enough.
I just don't understand it. If you don't like somebody, don't mess with them. Don't talk to them. Don't look at them. Just keep moving. They don't harbor all that shit in. There's something wrong with you. Don't make your problem everybody else's problem. Just stop it. And everyone, when you have friends and relatives, when you're sitting around and they say some dumbass shit, say, well, why did you say that? So ask a question. Don't say, well, you're an asshole, even though you're thinking that. Say, well, why do you feel that way? Why do you say that? And that will make them think about what they're saying. And that's the only way we're going to deprogram these people. They have to start thinking about why they act and think the way they do. But you can only do that by asking them questions. Because these people, if you listen, they already, and I said these people, and I mean these people, they already feel cornered. They feel like everybody's against them. It's like, we built this country, and we know better, and these people just don't understand. And these niggers are taking over, and they're marrying my women, and we got the damn Hispanics. They feel cornered. And there's nothing we can say that's going to divorce themselves of that.
So a cop just has to, every now and then a cop just needs to murder a black guy, or a black woman, so that they can feel better about themselves. Oh, Jesus.
This is important. Since you brought it up, this is important. That Michael Brown case was very eye-opening. It showed that particular municipality was using the black community to fund everything because they were pulling black people over, knowing they couldn't pay the fine, locking people up, taking their property, and that was basically funding that whole area. In addition, then we saw their social media postings of the law enforcement, and they are totally enthralled with white supremacy and the neo-Klan type activity. So, that being said, this is what we're dealing with. So,
and you've definitely spoken to something that motivates Jude. She just said, how simple to be open to offering kindness, because what the fuck is difficult with that? Exactly.
Right. And I know I'm not trying to get, but this, you know.
No, I get it. And all of a sudden, you know, if we were playing bumper music and shit like that, I'd cue up Elvis Costello singing "What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding." Right?
I get what, Todd. I really truly get the sentiment that you're sharing. And I never thought I would, you know, the relentless optimist would someday evolve or devolve to the ultimate naysayer. But my experience has been, if you ask them questions, what makes you think that, they will tell you, and it's 98.9% horseshit. You know?
Yep.
And maybe they are, maybe you can educate people like that. And maybe I'm pompous for even using the term people like that. But I mean, after observing what they're up to and who they put their faith in, you know, the human embodiment of Sunkist, it's a tough job. I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of listening, and maybe they'll ultimately get the bullshit out of their systems and start talking sense. But damn, that's way down the road.
Well, see, it's like something that Ron, and I'd meant to mention this earlier, Ron and Raleigh said a little bit ago, what we have here is white men are in the grips of a type of testosterone poisoning only common to white men. This mutation is only present in white males. It makes you want to run out and get a gun and shoot shit. Hard to argue with that. But anyway, I have got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here.
That's it. Leave. Go ahead, leave.
Well, I got to go. I got to go put shit away.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm giving you a rough time.
Because I ran in here at the very last moment after, you know, glorious hours. And Jesus, the sun wasn't even that strong. And I think I'm a little pink, which is cool. Yeah, because pink. Anyway, I'm out of here. You guys have a great night. Todd, thanks for everything. And thanks for letting me know about Bob Pass. Scott, I appreciate it.
All righty.
You guys have a good night. See ya. Scott and Todd, and to my mind, the exact way that conversation radio is supposed to work. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this little long-running conversation. Thanks to each and every one of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. You're part of the reason why this program's on the air. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks this evening for jumping in. We got things down to 570. We're $270 away from finishing last week. And that's amazing. And we got to finish this week. And then we'll start a new month. I'm sorry. It's the only way I know to keep it going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you. As well to Brother Bishop Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And that's about, 40 minutes away or so. Big pink supermoon tonight, if you want to check that out. We've got clear skies. I'm gonna check that out. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Please, if you get a minute, it costs you nothing. Send an email to your member of Congress. Ask them to sign on as a co-sponsor to H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It literally means the world in Appalachia. Please stay safe. Get your vaccines. Hey, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice is going to pay young people a $100 savings bond if they'll just go get their fucking shots. He said today, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I trying to talk anybody into anything, but we'll give you a $100 savings bond if you'll just go get your damn shot, because we've kind of hit a wall and we got a bunch of vaccines and ain't nobody going to take. Fine by me. Whatever it takes. Get shots in arms. In the meantime, though, observe all the regular protocols. Wash your hands frequently. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask if you're out and about. Use hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance. And, you know, if somebody comes towards you hollering about how it don't matter whether I call you doctor or not, it ain't nothing, avoid that person like the plague. You know, because they are. Later.